Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The 6 o'clock hour is upon us, so I'd like to call to order the March 6th meeting of the Berkeley County Board of Commissioners. And I'd like to start by welcoming everyone here, citizens who are here in person and those who are on Zoom with us. Delighted to have you with us today. Commissioner Trent, if you'd lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and our invocation.
I'd like to. Thank you very much, Chairman. Our kind Heavenly Father, please bless this county, this board, the people that are here to bring a united stance as far as moving this county forward. The decisions we make are not for one, but for all. As we move forward in society, we move society forward with us. And as we move everybody, everybody will prosper. For Christ's sake, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Join us in the pledge, if you will.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Trent, for that invocation and for leading us in the pledge. First to the clerk of our board, Ms. Cartwright, I'd like to make mention that Commissioner White is not with us tonight. Had a conflict and was not able to be here. So, but we still have a quorum of the four commissioners are present. Thank you. And always to start off a meeting, I want to read into the minutes the ethics statement that we're all bound by. In accordance with the State Government Ethics Act, it is the duty of every board member to avoid both conflict of interest and appearance of conflict. Does any board member have any known conflict of interest or appearance of conflict with respect to any matter coming before the board tonight? If so, please identify the conflict or appearance of conflict and refrain from any undue participation in the particular matter involved. Does any board member have any conflict of interest to announce? Hearing none, we'll go forward. Thank you. Now on at the beginning of our session, we always open public comments to any citizen who have any matter they'd like to bring forward to us. If you do, we're going to open that 3 minute per comment section. Please come forward. If you have any comments, give your name, your address, and the matter that you'd like to bring to our attention. We also have a closing session at the end of our meeting. So if anything happens during the meeting that you have questions about, you can always address us at that time as well, but I'll open the floor to any citizens. Hearing none? All right. Well, remember, there's also a segment at the end of our meeting, so you can speak to us then if you need to. Let's go to our appointments section of our agenda. The first thing on the agenda was going to be the introduction of our new senator, Mr. Bobby Hanek. But unfortunately, Mr. Hanek had a conflict. You know, they're in session now. And so he had planned to be with us, but unfortunately, that's not going to happen tonight. One of the things I'll bring to the county manager's attention that when we found out that he was not going to be, I spoke to Robin Payne, right? And suggested that perhaps if we could get all two of our representatives, Representative Willingham, and Senator Hanek, along with our lobbyist, Bob Steinberg, together, perhaps even maybe at our next, work session, but to have them there so we can, you know, make sure that we cover all of the priorities that we're gonna be discussing further on tonight, right? A good chance to have them all there, everybody get on the same page. We can review those with us. Juan, if you could set that up for us with Robin's assistance. Is that okay? Great, all right. So the next thing is a presentation by the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The representative, please come forward.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
Good. Amanda's handing out the same slides that I'm going to present to you so you can have them look over, and our contact information is also in the back. Thank you. I'm Natasha Henderson. I'm with the Transportation Planning Division. With me tonight is Amanda Killian, Scott Walston, who are also in the Transportation Planning Division, Stephanie Harmon, who is with the Rural the Peanut Belt Rural Planning Organization, and Craig, who's with the division office. We're also always going to be here as a resource for you if you need anything. So tonight, I just want to explain what a comprehensive transportation plan is. There's no action needed at this time. Just want to give you information and allow for any questions. So what is a comprehensive transportation plan, or CTP? It is a long-range needs-based plan. We're looking at the future transportation system needs for Bertie County. We're looking at highway needs, bicycle and pedestrian, and also public transportation and rail. We're going to work with everybody involved, with all the municipalities, with Bertie County, with the Rural Planning Organization, the public and community stakeholders. We'll be having surveys and other ways to get the public involvement, as to get their feedback and comments, and as well as everyone here on the board. So we're going to have the CTP adopted or endorsed on three different levels. We need a local adoption. We need endorsement from the Peanut Belt Planning Organization. And then the Board of Transportation needs to adopt it. This is all a part of the state statute that's listed here. So where does this fit in the construction process? Usually we look at projects and we're thinking about, okay, it's already designed, it's about to be constructed, but we're way out in the future looking at what needs are going to come available, so then we can decide how to fund them and then go into the design phase of actually getting areas listed of like, you know, how many lanes and all that kind of information. And then we'll go to the construction phases of it. So once again, this is really high level, no final designs. We're not doing an environmental study at this point. All that will be done after it's in the CTP. So this is a needs-based plan. We're looking at needs based on some kind of analysis or data. So we'll be working on that, and then we're going to come up with recommendations for solutions for those problems. Some of the things that we're looking at that haven't been previously in CTP studies is areas of flooding and how we can add resiliency to some of the roadways. So this is going to be a collaborative effort. We're going to look at the statewide transportation improvement program. We're going to look at local land development and land use plans, local transportation plans, as well as statewide transportation plans, and then local and statewide bike and ped transit plans. So all together, we want to come up with the best solution. How long does it usually take? We're saying about 12 to 18 months. We want to develop a local vision, kind of get some kind of assessment of the current system, and then look into the future of how the system will hold up then, and then make recommendations from there. After we develop a draft plan, we want to adopt it. So all between all that, you'll see us a few times along the way, and hopefully have lots of input. So this is an example. In my hand here is the old CTP for Bertie County. It was completed in 2012. So it's time to go through it and update it. This is what our new format is going to look like. This is Macon County as our example county. Very user-friendly guide, good maps, good lists, so you know exactly what's being recommended. So it'll be easy to find the areas that you'll need. There's some more examples of project sheets. And so hopefully we can update what's in this and make it look a little bit better to go forward. So here's all of our contact information. Do you have any questions for me tonight?
No. Mm-hmm. So highway wood line intercept with highway 17, Merritt Hill. And a couple of years ago, they had to put out interstate right away off where they'd be going to do it, make a turning lane, a wide out intersection there at Midway. Could you tell me, maybe the Division 1 planner, he might be tell me when the project's going to be that.
Do you know anything about that one?
Let's see here. On 45 going past Midway, right next door with Merritt Hill. Looks like design is underway. We have a let date. If it's the project I believe you're talking about, has a let date of June 20, 2023, so this year. It was project R-5809A. on NC-45 and is modernizing NC-45 from Washington County line, US 17 at Midway, bad and paved shoulders, addressing drainage, things of that nature. Is that the one?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay, yes, sir.
And coincidentally, I'll just ask about that thing.
Well, if you have any questions about any of them, feel free to reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to give you all the information. Sure.
I have a question also. Mm-hmm. We've got a large project that we're doing in the same area, and it's called Tall Glass Water. Tall Glass Water is public beachfront property, okay, that this county purchased approximately 5 years ago, maybe six, something like that. We've got millions of dollars worth of infrastructure going in right now, okay? We've discussed with DOT in the past in reference to a turnoff lane going through property to get to this piece of property, okay, that can be accessed. Our attorneys have reached in and looked at this, and one time we were given permission, and then permission was taken back. But this here would be instrumental, not only for Bertie County and for the citizens of Bertie County, but also we've got a championship golf course out there also called Ocano, okay? All this works hand in hand in economic development, ecotourism that Bertie County is going through with. The other thing in discussion is we talked in reference a few years back in reference to a rest area put on 17. We all know that Interstate 87 is going to be coming through somewhere in this area, okay? I say somewhere in this area because I hear numerous conversations here, then there. But 17 is going to be one of the main corridors.
That's actually particular.
So my thing is why could this be something that could be looked in and somebody get back with us on this? Since we do have some of the people that can answer these questions or go talk to the people that need to be talked to or that we can go talk to, okay, and try to get on this playing field to have this done. We all know that 17 is a corridor that is one of the only corridors that's a hurricane corridor to get off the OBX, okay, the Outer Banks, back in this way. Would it not seem that it'd be feasible to have a rest area in that area that I'm talking about, also to be able to put an off-ramp that would go into Tall Glass Water, which is our beachfront property, 150 acres, with 1,000 acres on one side that is going to be state parks recreation, okay, 300 acres on the other side, which is Salmon Creek. All this has been purchased and already donated to state parks, okay? It all works hand in hand. Now for DOT to be involved with it, to be able to get this right of way to go through here without causing any issues for any homes or things of that nature. It's just, Jonathan, correct me if I'm wrong, it's just a piece of farmland to go through. Is that not correct?
Yeah. Right. And let me add one piece to that, because I'm glad you brought that up, John. Because back in the early development of Interstate 87, when the initial planning team out of Chicago came over to Martin County to talk to us regionally about this, we presented this opportunity to them. At that time, we had purchased the property, and we thought that we already had an easement that would give us direct to Highway 17. That kind of fell through a little bit. But what those consultants said is that we needed to make our request to them in the planning stage of the interstate, because if we did and we applied for the rest stop there, that they would do the infrastructure that would tie us into that from the state. But we would have to make that request as part of their planning. Now, we know that that's still ongoing, and I don't know if it's been approved, but certainly it's not been funded, that I would think. So we want to make sure we don't get left out in the planning of that, right? That's an important piece, because this is a key project for this county, mm-hmm, and this region. And their offer was that they, as part of the planning for the highway, would be willing to invest in that for us. We don't want to miss that.
And again, I know numbers play a big deal as far as, okay, how much money is being invested in this area? Just in ourselves with the park, Bertie County Beach, Tall Glass Water is kind of the code name for it when we first bought the property, keep it secretive. But Bertie County Beach, we're making close to an $11 million investment in this beachfront property on the Albemarle Sound for the citizens of Bertie County. We've had a private developer come in and make a multi-million dollar development next to it, okay? Which is probably no further than 1,000 yards from us, okay? Would that be a correct statement, okay? Any type of off-ramp going into this area here would only make it easier for travelers to come to our beach. We're going to have primitive camping, RV parks, okay, for RVs to come in. We're talking about, what was it, 50 slots, something like that to start off with. Handicap, amphitheater, things like this, a learning center. These are things that are going to be happening here. And it's just not pie in the sky right now. And it's not just on paper and it hasn't started. Right now, heavy equipment's out there putting the infrastructure in now for water, sewer, electrical, handicap ramps, bathrooms, things of that nature. This is happening. We just picked up today, $500,000 Park F grant, another $500,000. We've got another $2.5 million that's coming to us in grants now, okay? And we're putting in money also. We're forking it in also, but we need the help of DOT to make this even a better project. And whoever we've got to meet with, whoever we've got to talk to, please give the county manager, get phone numbers, names, whatever we've got to do so we can set these meetings up and we can set some of our commissioners over, okay, and have this conversation because they need to know how big this is.
We don't need to miss this opportunity. And we've had that initial discussion, so they won't be surprised to hear it, but we want to follow up.
I can speak a little bit to the process. In the stage it's in now, I don't want to get too terribly deep into the weeds, but for our STIP, our strategic transportation plan, we have a system in place where every 2 years we submit projects for scoring to be programmed. And we're coming up this summer starts the P7 process. Any projects that you desire, if you would speak with Stephanie or reach out to me, as the RPO representative, they have more projects that they can submit than we do as DOT. We're limited in the amount that we could that we can submit. The RPO has many more. So if you discuss with her the projects, including the rest area, what she can do is add it to the list of projects that are getting submitted, and it'll go through the RPO, and there's a process involved with that. But that will get it on. It has to begin there in order to move forward. And I'm sure there's been some discussion. It may be in a plan. It could be in the CTP. And once it's in a plan, once you submit it to the RPO, it begins the process, and then it's on our radar.
Okay, to get it on that radar, what's the phone number? Who do we talk to? I heard you say a name, Stephanie, right?
Stephanie Harmon. She's okay.
RPO. I'm sorry, I didn't reach out to you.
She's on the printout.
Mm-hmm. I apologize. I didn't see you sitting back there.
From the division side, I can help and give you any information and point you in the right direction for anything you may need. We can also discuss this in the office, because if they're doing that sort of development there, that's something we want on our radar, because as more traffic starts to utilize that corridor, that roadway, that, you know, the opportunity there for some accidents, things of that nature could occur. And if we have it on our radar, we can sort of have an idea of what to expect. And it's similar to what we have so done on another candidate in South Fields. The development there is booming. So, you know, we are aware that's going, and we're just trying to keep pace.
Okay.
Because Northeastern North Carolina, there are several pockets that are developing at a pretty alarming rate, and we're just trying to keep up.
Okay.
Well, if Stephanie is the contact person, we can, one, if we were to reach out to her and try to set something up with you directly, Stephanie, because I know we have representation on the RPO, right? So yes. We want to make sure that this project is recorded there. You know, a lot of talk about it. And this is a property right not far from the bridge, right? The Edenton-Windsor Bridge. So you talk about congestion and travel. We want to make sure that this is a positive thing. So if we can set up some time to, you know, have that discussion.
And Chairman, who was on the RPO now?
Well, it was
Tammy.
It was Tammy. But we also had, Steve Biggs was on there too. Steve was actually the chairman, I believe.
Okay, but I don't think we have representation on there now. Okay.
No, Tracy.
Tracy.
Okay. That's not the RPO.
I don't think so. No,
no, we have not.
Has not.
We have not.
Has not. So, okay.
So we can, and that's a, be a good time to do that as well. Make sure that spot is filled. But we want to make sure that, you know, that we act on this now rather than later, right? Absolutely. Get ahead of the curve is always good for us.
But we still set appointments. We can still meet this young lady back behind you. I saw her do this. Okay. That's the deal. And there's a phone number we have to be able to get in touch with her.
Yeah. So. All right.
Anything else for us?
I think that's it. Thank
you. Right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your team being here with us too. We appreciate it. Great. All right. Next up, as we, Tracy, we're just speaking about you, is the revised master plan for Ocano from planning and inspections.
Hope everybody's doing well this evening.
Yeah.
Hey, the reason that this plan is coming to you is our subdivision ordinance requires master plans for plan unit developments and cluster developments to come for approval from the Board of Commissioners. And we already have an approved plan for Scotch Hall Preserve, and it is under new ownership and a name change now. It's called Ocano. I know you're all aware of that. And they want to do some redesign of the original master plan. And the main thing that made this a major change was the removal or the closing off of one of the existing streets. The planning board has reviewed it, and they have recommended approval contingent upon the submittal of a construction plan for review by the county engineer, and a plat depicting the revised property lines, if any, as described in the proposed revised master plan, and also that fire hydrants be installed according to the Midway Fire Department Fire Chief's recommendations. I've attached some a letter from Mr. Michael Escra, who's the president of Ocano Golf Course, and he is here today if anyone would like to speak with him. And I have all the details are in here. I don't, if you want me to read through them, I can read through them all. Yeah. It's kind of technical.
Yeah. I don't think we need that step. So,
and also there were some issues or concerns, I should say, about fire hose pools and things like that, but they are making this road will not completely go away. That the way I understand it, they will leave enough there. It will be accessible by their, maybe by golf carts, but it will be enough there that emergency vehicles can get completely around the new complex that they're planning to build there.
And if I can add to that, since we're on that conversation, I was in that meeting. We had Jody Serry, who is the chief for basically fire department Midway, okay, but also the overall spokesperson for the fire departments.
The association.
He has been out there. He has researched it. He has looked at it and has assured and advised us that they have left room to get fire engines where they need to get to and things of that nature. That's correct. Correct?
Right.
Okay. And I believe there was talking about the mains that were out there, making sure that there remain the mains as far as fire hydrants that need to be replaced and taken care of before any of this project gets started. Some of the things that are going to be on here is a restaurant, okay, pickleball courts, other buildings that are going to be going in here, and they're just taking lots and putting them together. So anyhow, contingent with the paperwork that's going to be needed, which would follow up prior to this or after this, that's where we're going with it.
Mike, is there anything that you want to talk about?
The streets that you're closing, the streets that are all closing, any of that land owned by private citizens?
So there is one kind of, the road is a interior road to the site that actually crosses between two parts of the site. And it's original, the location that was originally designed as part of the property for the clubhouse. So to fit the clubhouse into that site and things, this road is going to be shrunk, essentially. It's no longer going to be, the road will still exist. It will no longer be a vehicular road. It will have the 20-foot wide access way for golf carts, pedestrians, bicycles, but will no longer be vehicular access, but the 20 feet wide still allows a fire engine to access both sides. So none of it is, it's all privately owned by the golf course. No private individuals own it. There's golf course land on both sides of it. There is no actual homes that are adjacent to it.
And actually EMS also, I meant fire department has been out there and reviewed this. It was a good question though, that they will be able to get fire engines down there, down this road that he's talking about, to be able to get where they need to be.
And since you will then have only one major entrance, right, to the complex, is that what I'm hearing? Is that the road that used to be the other?
No, it's not that. It's on the interior kind of
side. Ah, on the inside, not that back piece.
The existing entrances to the site, the main entrance and the one that's gated
remain the same. Great, great. Tracy, anything else that we should consider other than this matter? Just one piece of that?
That's the main.
So it has been approved by the planning board, but you still need
it. They recommended approval.
So you still need a vote from us, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any further questions?
And it was recommended with the contingence of the paperwork.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Questions?
I make a motion we move forward with the approval of this.
Okay. Right. Well, here's second. Commissioner Tripp made the motion. Second by Commissioner Balance. All those in favor of approving the recommendation of the planning board, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, Tracy.
And Mike,
and just a note, since we do have DOT people here, these are all private streets in this
development.
They're making his notes on all this, okay? So. Hey, Tracy, good point. Yeah, you said that, okay? I saw that guy making them notes back there.
Mike, thank you for being here too.
Thanks, Mike. That.
Okay, great. Next is a presentation of the animal shelter assessment by Bill Daggett for DWG Architects. Okay, Bill?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. And our assistant county manager, David Scarborough, is here. I think he's going
to
kind of.
Joe, if you can go ahead and get him set up to share his screen.
Yeah, it says it's disabled at this point.
Pardon me?
It says that the host has disabled the screen sharing. So if they could set that up, I can share the screen.
Okay, is that you?
No, that's them.
I just made you co-host, Bill, so you should be able to share your screen now.
Okay. Can you all see that?
Not yet.
I can't see anything right now, blank screen. Except for a dark screen.
How about that?
No.
Wow.
Joe, what's the procedure for him to do that once you've shared it with him?
Okay. It's on the
there it goes.
Here we go.
But Joe, it's on the computer, but it's not on the big screen on the monitor in the commissioner's room.
Okay.
I can't do anything about that.
No, I'm talking to Joe, who he's our IT guy, Bill. I'm sorry.
Maybe coming. Joe, did you get that?
Yes, I'm trying to slide his screen over.
Okay.
Now.
The mouse is moving around on here. He's working on it.
All right.
I just saw the mouse move across the big screen too. Okay.
There we go.
I'm moving it left to right. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I just saw it pop up for a second in the corner screen.
There you go. Keep here going.
Yeah, enlarge that up top.
Right. Can you see it now?
I can see it. Yeah.
Enlarge it. There you are. Right.
Okay. So thank you, Joe. Okay. If you'll hold on 1 second, let me talk to them for just a minute and then you can get started. Thank you. This is mainly for the new commissioners, even though Michael's not here, Commissioner White's not here. When I started at Bertie County, one of the first things that you talked about was a directive that you gave me was to address the Bertie County Animal Shelter. The current animal shelter is outdated. It's undersized. It doesn't provide accommodations to adequately comply with the current regulations and practices, and it continues to require ongoing maintenance. The state has contingently and conditionally approved us continuing to operate the shelter since 2020. The only reason why they've been working with us to allow us to continue is based on the understanding that we were going to do something about it, building a new shelter. Basically, their comments are the housing facilities were not structurally sound. And I've got a list of there's about six different inspection reports that you can read and show you some of those items. I won't go over all that. Our staff have been doing everything they can to keep it in compliance and to keep it safe for the animals and the workers. When ARPA funds came out, we set aside $300,000 to work on this project. We have also received about $208,000 in directed grants this year from the state, which we added to that total to give us roughly $502,000. But in January of 2022, we put an RFQ out to ask for assistance in helping to not only we posted an engineer looking for an engineering architectural firm to do the assessment needs of the county and then to do design and should we move forward with it, also manage the construction process throughout. In April 2022, DWG Architects, through doing business as Shelter Planners, who is on the Zoom with us today, completed the work. Well, he was selected in April 2022. The Sheriff's Office, Animal Control Officers, Building Maintenance, and Finance staff all participated in the review of the RFQs and the decision to select DW Architects. The scope of the services that were developed in the RFQ were phase one was a programming and needs assessment, the alternatives and designs for cost estimates. And phase two was the actual bidding and negotiating and construction administration of the project if we move forward with the project. The needs assessment portion has been completed. That's what this is tonight. And once this presentation has been completed and then all questions answered through Bill, and I've got Skip here from Animal Control who's here to help us as well. Once all those questions are answered, the next steps will be for the commissioners to provide direction on where they want to go with this subject. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bill Daggett, and afterwards we'll answer any questions or make any more comments.
Okay, thank you. I hope everybody can hear me clearly and you can see the screen. We are going to have about 13 slides here after this first one, and we're going to just describe our process a little bit, talk to you about how we arrived at the decisions that we did, and then show you a couple of concepts, one of which would be the full concept, and then one that's truncated a bit to try to help with the budget issues. So here is a slide. We start out looking at your intake history,
yeah,
and we go to statistics that we derive from shelter reports from the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, Veterinary Division. This is done annually. You can see here that there's some holes in this. 2016, 2019, and 20, which were our COVID years, of course, and you see, it's a bit of a mixed bag. So we've actually taken this and taken the years that make sense to use as an averaging tool. And we've also looked at 2021. So the original free report that Skip and David submitted looks a little bit like this. It shows the population. It shows the number of animals that you service that year, shows me how many housing spots you had for cats and dogs, how many of each were served and their dispositions. And at the bottom, you can see existing canine LOS and existing feline LOS. LOS is length of stay, which is the basic approach we use to sizing an animal shelter. Okay. Following that, we go through and look at statistics for your county, which you can see percentage of relinquished animals by populations, about 3.75. We usually expect to see 3 to 4%, but that does vary depending upon whether you're rural or you're more urban. You're fitting into that. Your canines are 60%. Your cats are about 40%. You can see that that's pretty close to the national averages. The canine returned to owner, adopted, transferred, remaining in the shelters, canines euthanized, all gives us the ability to calculate a save rate for the dogs that come through your shelter. And you're at about 71%, which is not bad. The cats, on the other hand, are only at about 10.3%. And in working with Skip on this, we learned that the larger number of cats, maybe 90 to 95%, are feral, and that is why there's so few saved. Okay, so now we're going to take that and put it in a data calculation format using the 2021 data. And so this line here with the yellow is the 21 statistics. You were about 60% canines, 40% felines. Then we look at anticipated shelter statistics, and we have program spaces. And what we mean by that is the housing spaces for canines and felines. And we have 13 for canines and 15 for cats. Each space provides 365 days of occupancy. And so what we do is multiply the spaces by the occupancy, and it gives us what we call animal care days. This is essentially your shelter capacity. We then divide by the number of animals you serve that year, and you can see that our average available length of stay for dogs was 12 days, and for cats was 21. And we know that the cats did not stay that long because most were feral, and we'll get into that in a little bit. I went ahead and just showed our rule of thumb shelter sizing based on the number of spaces for cats and dogs. Looked like it would project something of a need of 2,600 square feet, and at current costs, we're looking at $1 million to $1.1 million roughly. Okay. The next thing we look at is the monthly throughput to calculate how many dogs remained in the shelter each month. And here is our graph of that. The blue represents dogs in. The green represents dogs out that were saved, returned to owner, or adopted, or transferred to another facility, a rescue group, that sort of thing. The red is the dogs that were euthanized. And the yellow then shows us dogs remaining. And you can see I've highlighted January through August. In each of those months, the number of dogs remaining in the shelter was beyond the capacity that you had for dogs. And we didn't get into the details of that. I'm sure Skip had to hustle around to get rescue groups to take those dogs, which he's been very, very good at doing. Okay, the next is to look at the cats and what they look like. And here's a similar graph, same things. Blue is cats in, green saved out, red euthanized out, and yellow is cats remaining. You can see that at no time was the shelter overrun with cats. And that's, of course, because 90 to 95 are feral, and they only stay 3 days, and they are then euthanized. Okay. What we do then is we project the optimum shelter size, and we use an average of the 10 years of statistics I first showed you, modified that to take out the 0 years and the non-reported years, and use those averages as the basis. We also decided to just go to 50-50 for ease of computation, because we've now upped the number of animals that we would expect based upon the average over the course of that period of time. And also knowing that the cats are mostly feral. So same procedure. We have number of spaces, 27 total, which is 15 for dogs and 12 for cats. Okay. And we then go through the same calculation. We multiply the spaces by 365 and we divide by the number of animals. And you can see that we have 14 days average length of stay for dogs, and the cats are showing 11. But we've taken into consideration all of the feral cats, and so producing enough spaces so that they get 11 days showing here actually translates to 14 or more for the cats who are adoptable. Again, our rule of thumb shelter sizing shows about a 2,300 square foot need, and now we're somewhere between 924 and $1 million. And again, the cat's length of stay has been reduced to account for the ferals, and they will be treated exactly as they are now, which is by county ordinance, 3 days, and they are euthanized. Okay, so from all of that, we developed an initial shelter design response. Our first look is the site plan, and this is on County Farm Road, and the magenta line is your site boundary. You can see that I've got a sanitary sewer line coming across that we were able to, the county helped us with in the city. There's a manhole very close to this, so your sewage, whoops, excuse me, clicked when I shouldn't have. You've got access for sewage. You have an overhead electrical line coming through, and we also have a water main coming up right here in front of the property. So what we've done is we have a wet weather ditch that runs through here. So we took the back half of the property, if you will, because there's sufficient room, and we located the animal shelter there. We provide a drive-in and we provide a drive-through sally port potential for animal control so that they can deliver animals. And if the money is available undercover, if not, it's defensed. And we're showing two potential future extensions. The county's growth rate is very low, and so I don't expect that you would have to face that anytime in the next 20 years. But once you did, we have that planned into this. The next thing is to look at a plan, and this is closing in on it now. The parking is in this area down here below. And we have an airlock, which is required by the energy code. We have a very small reception and adoption lobby, a very small area for adoptable cats. This area here is essentially the shelter staff's corridor and working units. We have cat isolation, cat observation, space for feral cats. We have a space for receiving. And we usually put a dog tub in receiving so that if a dog comes in and is really filthy, they can clean it up before they decide where it should be going. We have three dog isolation kennels, three dog observation kennels, and a total of 9 for adoptable dogs, which gives us a total of 15. So we have 15 dog kennels, 12 cat cages altogether, about 2,300 square feet. And again, this will calculate to about 925 to 1,041,000. If you add the sally port, that's going to be somewhere between 90 and 105,000 if it's covered. If not, it would be somewhat less. Okay, our second take then, let me show you a three-dimensional kind of shot of this first. This is what it would look like. You can see the entrance. This is the essentially the airlock and the main body of the shelter here. The kennels are on this side with a fenced enclosure outside. The sally port would be a drive-through here, and parking would be out front. When we did this, David asked me if, you know, what we would do if there simply was not enough money in the budget to build this size shelter. And this is what we're recommending as the optimal size shelter for you all to build. Skip has told us that he needs 15 spaces for dogs at the very least, and we've kept it at that. So the next look is a minimal shelter, and let's look at that site plan again. You can see the building's much smaller. The future block to the right here is much larger. We could add all of those things that we don't include now in the future as money becomes available. So let's look at that plan. Okay, now we have the three isolation, three observation, but only three adoptable dogs because we've cut out six in order to save cost. We don't have the lobby anymore. You enter into the shelter manager's office, but you're still separated away so that all of the support facilities that the shelter staff uses are separated away from the public, which is fairly standard. Again, this now has nine total dog kennels, eight total cat cages. It's about 1,500 square feet. And now we're getting down into the, you know, $600,000 to $680,000 project. If you add the Sally Port and make it fenced only, but with sliding gates to protect animal control officers and enable them to get dogs out of the truck without fear of them escaping, that's maybe $15,000 to $25,000 additional. Okay, and here is a three-dimensional picture of that building. Again, it's very similar to the other, except that it's much smaller. And I'm ready for questions.
All right. Thank you, Dale.
Bye. Yeah. The first building you showed us, which is without the Sally Port, is 2,297 square feet. Is that correct?
Let's go back and get to that.
It's coming up to $453 a square foot. Then you have
that's correct.
And then you have a Sally Port add-on that's coming up $269 a square foot.
Yeah, a little bit less.
Okay.
Because it's not heated or cooled.
That's fine. My question to you is, the dividing walls in between the dog runs here?
Yes, sir.
Is that masonry?
Yes, they are.
It's concrete block.
Pardon me?
It's concrete block, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it's going to be poured cells? Are you filling the cells? Is it going to be solid cells?
The cells are for the exterior walls. Some are solid.
No, I'm talking about the dividing walls in between the dog runs.
Oh, in between. Okay, so there are solid masonry walls between dog isolation and dog observation, and between dog observation and adoptable dogs. You can see those, both interior and exterior.
Exactly. I'm looking at it right now. Are they going to be poured cells or they're going to be solid?
They're going to be open celled concrete masonry units.
Okay.
Because we have to run reinforcing in them.
Okay. The reinforcing you're running in is going to be what? Just standard rebar coming up, or how are you going to do it?
Yeah, it's standard rebar.
Okay. Next question is, the exterior of this building, is this basically just a metal building on the outside?
Probably not. It's probably wood framed. And the exterior siding could be any number of things. We're right now doing a shelter in Duplin that's a wood frame building. It has metal siding, but there are other siding options. It depends upon cost.
All right. So you put metal siding on top of wood framing, correct?
With a zip system exterior air barrier, yes.
Okay. I understand that part. And with the wood framing that's going to be underneath it, is this going to be treated or is it going to be untreated wood?
No, it's standard framing.
Standard framing?
Right. The all of the area where the dog kennels are.
Yeah.
That's all concrete masonry units.
No, I understand that. You explained that already because I wanted to make sure what that was.
Right. So where the cats are and receiving and grooming and all the rest of it, that's standard construction. We use a cement board with a wall glaze on it, for instance, right here is a single temporary hold for dogs. And so that's protected from water with the cement board
with. So you can be using a cement board, like a Hardy cement board that comes in 4x6 something, sheets?
Something like that, yes.
Okay. And how are you going to seam the joints, or are they going to be seamed?
They should be unseamed. They're small.
So they're unseamed.
I think you'll get a joint at the corner. The wall glaze covers everything and fills that.
Okay. The lighting that's going in here, the overhead lighting, is this going to be an open ceiling to the joists above?
No, sir.
Or is it a closed ceiling?
Okay. The ceiling in the main portion of the building, adoption lobby, cats and so forth, that's all acoustical tile. Okay.
That part I understand, but where the dog runs are at, because we're looking at the main part of the building itself. Okay.
Right.
And of course, we're looking at the square foot price. It's not that we don't want a building. We definitely need a building. We definitely need to take better care of the dogs. And I think we need this. But the point I'm trying to make here, we're talking $453 a square foot when we built a library at $250 a square foot.
Understood.
Okay.
Ceilings. In the interior.
How much do you guys charge for management job? I'm sure if you're going to be doing the job as the architect, you're going to be letting the job, and then you're going to have oversight, correct?
Well, to the extent that that the architect has oversight, the contractor who is selected is in charge of actual construction.
Who looks after our interests? Usually it's the architect that we hire.
Right, exactly.
All right, what's the percentage that you charge?
It's about 20% of the fee, I think.
20%?
I think so, yes. Of the fee.
You know, it's funny because I think we did the library and it was a 10% oversight.
For the entire project?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, no. I'm less than that, probably. But
I thought you just said
20%. I thought you were referring to construction administration.
Excuse me, Bill. His contract that we have for him, it's already set at $88,600. The first half of it was this piece of it.
What is that
and
percentage?
Pardon me?
What is that percentage on square foot? Do you know?
I haven't figured that out. I don't know.
Okay.
But the first half of the contract he's done is to do what he's presented today. And then the second half of it will be to design it, to do the architectural designs and the construction manager once we select someone. So that's what his contract covers, all of that already. So
well, I'm sitting here speaking.
And I want to address the cost issue, if I might.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So the floors in this building are going to need to be an epoxy resin floor so that they are going to meet all the state standards. All of the concrete block has to be filled with block filler and then treated with epoxy paint. Okay, we use epoxy paint in most of the animal care areas. The ceilings in the dog kennels need to be a perforated metal ceiling to keep the sound down and to be washable. We can use vinyl outside to reduce costs some, but we also include in here all of the kennels, which are a prefabricated system. And all of the cat cages, which are also prefabricated.
John, to your original question, and David, if 88,000 is the contract amount, even if you're looking at the smaller footprint of 1,500 square feet, that would be 14.5% of the kind of minimum cost, 607. You're looking at the larger cost of 683,000, you're looking at 12.9%. So we're somewhere between 13 and 14.5 percent of just that fee. Is that the only fee? That's it there in total.
But that fee also included doing the needs assessment study. Okay. So we need to remove that from it.
We have already used about half of the contract price that he's done to pay for the needs assessment and what he's done so far. The rest of it, so about half of that will go towards this piece.
So to John's question, that's what you were wanting to figure, John. So it's going to be somewhere between half that amount. So somewhere about 7%, 6 to 7% outside of the needs assessment.
Without having done any math, yes, I'm going to trust your judgment on that.
Right. Tell us a little bit about that needs assessment. How much is involved? Because if we're talking about you know, about $45,000 for the needs assessment. What exactly goes into that?
No, I'm sorry. I think they've got their math wrong there. I think we have spent a total of about $22,000 so far.
Okay, that may be my...
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think we're going to be closer to about 10% on the
10%
on architectural work for the building.
All right.
And what I thought you meant originally was, you know, construction administration is about 1/5 of my effort in the project. The rest is designing the building, also paying for the mechanical engineer and the electrical engineer and the plumbing and structure, all of which the state requires.
Mr. Raska, I see you here for maintenance. They're showing us buildings reference animal shelters. Got a square foot price of $453 a square foot. How's that sound to you?
Sound a little expensive.
Well, I can tell you we are currently constructing a shelter in Duplin. It's larger than this one. It does have some additional features such as a generator, a completely enclosed sally port. That building is just at just under $500 a square foot. And that was bid. Again, the finishes that are required for these buildings to meet the state's requirements are pretty costly.
And he is correct. We've spent about $24,000 so far to that contract.
So, David, you know our concern. We have about, what, $502,000 currently, right? And even looking at the minimal cost and not including the sally port, we're looking at about $607,000. So we're short. Significantly short, I mean, $100,000 plus, $100,000 to $115,000. So what is the thought of how we would make that up? You know, the status of where we are in terms of budget and available funds. I mean, are we looking at this take it or leave it kind of thing? You think there are any additional opportunities for us here for savings or what?
Mr. Chairman, just to let you know, the smaller building, 1,518 square feet, is up to $400 a square foot, which is $150 a square foot more than what we pay for the library.
I know the concern, but here's what are the options that we have here, as you see.
Well, as we talked about once earlier in one of our other sessions, like I said this morning, a few minutes ago, we had roughly $420,000 set aside to focus on the animal shelter at this point. We have this is not going to be a 1-year project, obviously, if we were to get it accomplished. So one of the things we can look at is that we have this fiscal year, this upcoming fiscal year that we're budgeting for now, $419,000 that we can put towards this project.
Make sure I understand. I thought maybe I wrote this down wrong. I thought the original statement you made is that we currently have about $502,000 available. Is that correct?
We received $300,000 from ARPA that we set aside.
Yeah.
We got $208,000 from the directed grants from the state. Out of that, we've already encumbered $88,000 to cover.
Oh, yeah, I understand it.
This. So that what's cost. Left is $419,000.
Right. Okay. But that is in his price, right? The study price. So again, we're still about $100,000 short, right? 502. $607,000
if we were looking at the $650,000 mark, we're about $200,000.
No, I'm looking at the smaller one, the one that's 1,500 square feet, which is 607 to 683, right? So that's at least $100,000, right?
That's correct.
Yes. And so your comment was that if we had that in this year's budget, we could look at carrying over to the new budget for the difference. Is that
that's correct? That's correct. We basically would have to try... In the next year, we would be committing ourselves, if we started forward in it now, we're committing ourselves next year to ensure that we budget for the remainder of the project.
Which would be approximately $110,000.
Yes, sir. So.
Actually, it's $188,000 on what I just calculated.
The larger one.
No, the smaller one.
What, the smaller
one? I'm taking the 419. I'm subtracting it from the 607.
And then he's got 502, John. 607.
He's already used 80 some thousand.
But that's included into the 607,000.
Is it?
Isn't it?
No, that's your build cost
we have
right there.
$419,000
exactly
sitting in the project budget at this point in time for the animal shelter.
Yes.
What he is suggesting is $650,000 to build the smaller one. I think that's the right price.
680.
And if he puts the sally port at 683.
So if you take 680 minus 419, it leaves us just under $200,000, correct? Okay.
So that other cost is not included in the 607, the money we've already paid him.
No, it's not.
It is not.
This is just construction cost.
I want to make sure because I thought it was part of the planning.
The $419,000 we have right now is after the contract, his contract that we have already encumbered.
Okay.
So it's $419,000 that we currently have towards the construction of the animal shelter.
Okay. I have a question.
So to help you all a little bit with why this costs so much, you keep referring to your library, and I understand completely your point of view. We just completed a shelter in Caldwell County that was originally designed starting in 2018. That building was bid in May of 2021, and it bid at about $325,000 to $330,000 a square foot. At the same time, we were designing the Duplin County shelter, and we designed them using the same construction methods. And the Duplin County shelter came in at over $500 a square foot. So we backed off to wood construction to reduce some of the cost, because we had originally developed both of them as metal frame construction. In 5 months, it went from 300 and some dollars a square foot, 325 or 30 a square foot, to 500 in a heartbeat in 2021. Now that rate of inflation has slowed a little bit, but we are still looking at inflation rates in construction well above the overall inflation rate. And the problem is that the COVID crisis killed off a lot of subcontractors. And so there's much more work to be done now and fewer people to do it. And their prices have really escalated. And unfortunately, this particular building type requires some pretty sophisticated HVAC equipment, very sophisticated finishes. The construction of the building itself isn't much more than wood frame, construction. And you can see here, I have no space in this building for any mechanical. That's all up in the truss space. We essentially design an open space at the center of the trusses, and that creates where we put all of the HVAC so that we are not taking up floor space, and that tends to bring the cost down. We've been doing that for 20 some years. When we started all of this, probably back in 1999 or so, you could build these buildings for 200 and some dollars a square foot. But that has steadily escalated in the 20 some years I've been doing this.
Commissioner Balance here. I can't wrestle in my mind. I know, we have a shortage of subcontractors and things of that nature, but you're talking about almost a $200 per square foot difference. That's a big jump. That's a big jump from, just 259, how long ago?
3 years.
That's a big jump.
2 years.
And let me give you an example, David and Bill. Another project that we're working on is a teacher housing project. And you're right, during the early stages of COVID, that cost skyrocketed for us in terms of supply chain problems and, getting anybody to agree to a fixed bid contract was almost impossible. But however, in the last several months, we've been able to renegotiate that contract down significantly because the cost of goods are dropping, have dropped significantly. In fact, the lumber cost, and this is primarily lumber, is below the pre-pandemic cost per square foot, below. And so we were able to renegotiate that. I mean, we got to look at, Bill, if you understand, what is the cost per square foot here? Now, this is all for high floors. So it does give us some significant concern when we look at other projects.
And I understand, and I would suggest maybe you give Davis Brinson in Duplin a call and talk to him about it, because, you know, they face the same issues. And then also the folks at Caldwell County. Those are the two most recent that we have done. And in, you know, prior to COVID, we were not quoting, you know, $325 a square foot. And we felt very comfortable when we bid Duplin that that $325 was going to be a reasonable bid, because 5 months earlier we had bid a similar project and it came out at $325. We are facing in Duplin right now inability to get the distribution cabinet for electrical. There are still supply problems and the costs of all of these things are still very high. You are correct. Lumber has come down. That was the reason why we chose to change from a steel stud frame building in Duplin to wood, and it saved them about $130,000. But all of the cost of the equipment and the cost of the finishes and HVAC and plumbing and so forth, it keeps it up there. I certainly hope it's going to be less than 400 or 450 a square foot. And very possibly there's a contractor locally who could do this project, but they're very complicated. It is almost like building a hospital.
So I wanted to say, number one, you know, I am your budget person, so I understand what this impact is on our budget and on the future years here. And I've expressed to you in the past how concerned I am about the price. That's without question. Yes. But we also need to understand that, and that's why I got Skip here to help back me up on this. The state has already told us, I have a stack of inspections where they have conditionally, and our last inspection was in January of this year. And they really, they did not even give us a conditional. They disproved the, so, but understand this, the current facility can't be brought up to speed or brought up to a condition. The state won't approve it. And if we do nothing, the state will shut it down. And so that means we have to determine other options. David, and that's fine. I mean, we can do that. I just want to make sure we are all aware of that.
I think you're right. And we've heard that. And our concern is not with trying to fix what's there. We know that's beyond repair. We're looking at something new, but we've got to be able to build what we can afford.
I totally agree.
And so the concern is here in terms of what does this cost based on what we believe, and we have some people here who work a lot with construction, that this is an awful high price per square foot, plain and simple, right? And yeah, there's some intricacy concerning this bill, yeah, but concerning we're building multifamily housing at a square foot price, I mean, nothing like this, you know, compared. And the cost has dropped significantly and it is still declining. Now, the question is, can we afford to commit to this price with funds that we do not have allocated, knowing what our next year budget looks like? That's the dilemma here. So,
and I'm not here to. I totally understand that. I'm just presenting it to you. And you know, the next step is for you to tell us what we need.
That's
correct. You had a question, sir. Bring it on, Mr. Roberts.
Is this the only person, only consultant group that we contact and can give us the price on building the Alamo shelter? Are we looking at other quotes from other companies?
We submitted an RFQ. We received two applicants. Okay. We analyzed, we met with both of them. We had both of them do presentations. both of the presentations when they did it were basically the same cost of building something in the future if they were the, you know, determined. So we chose this firm because they have a tremendous amount of experience, not only here in North Carolina, but up and down the coast and throughout the country. And so we had confidence that they would provide us with the best project they could. So yes, we did look at some. We only had two responses.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Didn't we send people to another county to look at
Terrell County. It was over nine, and it was built about 9-10 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
I asked our state inspector about that, and the laws and regulations into building an animal shelter have changed since then, mm-hmm. to where it requires more than what they have.
How big was that animal shelter?
Sir?
How big was the animal shelter? That one.
I think that was around 1,700 square feet, wasn't it, David?
1,700 or 1,800.
Yeah.
And the working drawings for that, as far as the blueprints for that,
they were part of the RFQ that we provided for them to look at and review. And
does the county still have a copy of those working drawings?
Yes, sir.
And what was the cost of that, David? 1,700 square foot. What was the cost of the one in Terre?
I don't remember. I don't know. I don't know.
No. Bill,
I can check, but I don't.
It'd be interesting to compare that 1,700 square foot build and their price compared to this 1,500 square foot building and this price.
And
I'm correct. The 1,700 foot, that the one in Terrell County doesn't have walls, right? It's just fenced in on, you went to see it, right? It's just fenced in on the outside. It's not really walled in.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one difference. It's built with walls.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Bill, did you want to say something?
Yeah, and 10 years ago, the cost per square foot was considerably less, for sure. I can't remember what it was, but way less than what we're looking at today.
Yeah. Question: is a stage plan optional?
Well, that's essentially what we've done with this smaller setup.
But it's still not affordable for us. So that's still not working. And what I mean by a stage plan that we can afford at this time with contingency to get it where we need to, maybe on, you know, upcoming years. Or something of that nature. Because can't spend what we don't have. You know?
Sure, understood. I wish it could be less expensive. You know, we're having the same conversation with everybody that we work with. I just worked with Sampson County on doing nothing but renovating their current shelter, which was basically an old, designed originally to be basically a hog barn. And all they want to do is add about, 1,000 square feet to it and put HVAC in it. And that's going to cost them over $100,000. You know, I mean, it's just everything is expensive. And especially when we get to these smaller projects, because we have concentrated in this building, we have usually animal shelters have a whole lot more office space for administration, that sort of thing. And that's pretty inexpensive space to build. The cost is all in meeting the state's requirements for all of these animal housing units and for protecting the animals while you're treating them.
David, what is the decision parameters that you think we need to?
I'm sorry.
I mean, what are the decision parameters around this? You know, we're a few months out of budget. We're going to be looking at that very shortly. When do you need that decision in order to keep this opportunity alive?
The funding that we have in place now, if you tell us today, yes, then we can move forward with it. If you tell us to wait, we can wait. And when I'm saying next fiscal year, I'm talking about the 24-25 fiscal year to finish funding the rest of it, not in this next year's budget. I'm not suggesting we put anything else into it. In the budget that you were currently working on, I see no need for us to put any additional funds into the budget request for the animal shelter. I'm saying that if we use the funds that we have, it will get us through the next fiscal year and allow us to start planning for the 24-25 fiscal year. Okay. Yes.
Well, that's a new rub, because I didn't get that in the early discussion. So we would look and then the possibility of at least extending that for two cycles before.
My assumption, in construction, the way the construction is now, by the time we get the architectural plans done,
right,
then you approve that and then put an RFP out for a contractor to build.
We would bid the project, I would think. Isn't that appropriate?
Yes.
You have to go through that process.
Yes.
So you'll get competitive bids. Now, we did this with Caldwell, and at the time that came in okay, and they moved forward. Duplin bid it the first time, and it came in, as I said, over $500 a square foot. And we rebid it, and it came down to under $500 a square foot. And we negotiated with the contractor from there to remove maybe another 5% or so. But that's about all you can expect.
Yeah. So that being said, you know, once we get to that point with the bid, we get a contractor in place and they start, by that time, we'll be working on the next year's budget. And we should have a better feel then for what the total cost per square foot is.
Here's what I just heard. What Bill said is that in Duplin, they bid it. It was much higher. Looks like they were kind of in the same position we were in, saying, how do we afford this? And then that was rebid. Came down significantly, and they were able to find savings with the contractor to get to a price.
Which is all right. Part of the process, that, we would
that's,
expect.
That's correct. And that would be the process here too, I would assume. The original bid was for a metal framed building. That's steel studs, steel trusses. It had metal roof. Okay. It has metal siding. We kept the metal roof and the metal siding. The only thing we changed was the type of construction. We went to wood frame. And they gained about $130,000 off of the original cost by doing that. The contractor then negotiated, and I could go back and look, but I don't think that after it was all done, they saved more than another few percentage points, up to about 5%.
So to speak to your question about timing and stuff, two things we need to remember. Number one, the longer we delay it, the more possible that the state is going to come in here and say, shut it down, figure out something to do with your animals. So we're going to have to continually change programs. Second thing is, I'm not sure about ARPA. I can't remember what the rules are as to when that has to be spent, but it has 2024, right?
Yeah, we've got and well into 2026 for ARPA dollars.
The directed grant has to be
right
in this year's budget. So, you know, we can't by next year, right, into 2024. So that's the only holdback of maybe delaying actually doing anything, or, you know, and that's the time frame we have. There are some time frames as to when we have to spend the funding that we have, or we have to give it back, or return it.
Right. It's going to be, again, share what I heard. I heard Bill say that with Duplin, they bid once, they came back a second bid, they found some savings. I think beyond that, it was about 5%. Now, it's looked at those potential kinds of things on our, but this is the original bid. Is that correct?
The major savings that they achieved with the second bid was with the change to wood frame construction. We're already considering that here as the way to go because we know it's less expensive.
Okay.
That building is being built right now at about $498 a square foot is my recollection. And we're projecting here $400 to $450. That's because probably less site work. You have utilities very close. They had to extend some utilities there. They did add a generator. So I took that into account when I suggested this price range. Again, if things continue to come down, that's going to work in your favor. But you know, there's no telling because inflation has not been tamed by any means. And we're already assuming a wood frame building.
Yeah. So another thing, two things to consider is that our Lisa Carlson, who was the state inspector, who's been inspecting us for the past 4 years. The last time we had the inspection, she was not present. There's a new inspector. And when I called to speak with her, she's out. Just we don't know where. So, but I say that, say she had informed us that there were some grant possibilities out there for animal shelters. And so we're looking into that to see if there's anything else we can do. Bill actually gave me the contact number for, I can't remember her name, Bill, Lisa.
Kimberly Daniels with the USDA. I'm also working.
And I spoke with her today.
Yeah.
And they don't do grants, but they do loans. But if we're doing under $500,000, it's really not optimal for them to do so. So, but that I'm not really interested in taking out a loan yet to do something like this. So I told her thank you, and I'd get back to her if we needed to. Right. But so like I said, that's all I have for you, and that's all he's had. So
yeah, I think we know where we are. First of all, Skip, let me say we're gonna build a shelter. That's not even a question for us. What we're trying to do is make sure that we spend taxpayers' money appropriately. We know what we have to spend with. I like your idea of being able to carry that forward. That's a good plan for us. But we still got to make sure that what we're paying for, and the best way to evaluate that is what is this costing us on a square foot basis to complete this job? And we have concerns there. Actually, we have concerns. So what is the pleasure of the board at this point?
Well, from what I'm seeing here, I'm speaking for myself. I do want a new animal shelter, but I don't want this animal shelter at this price. And I think that we need to turn around and bid it out with other general contractors and get a price from them. And metal buildings, wood framing, he's right, it could be cheaper. But the longevity of a wood frame building versus a metal building is a big deal. And it's going to be a big deal for us 15 years from now. And you got your maintenance manager over there shaking and says, you're absolutely correct, because he's the man that's going to have to deal with this.
That's right.
And so would not do a wood frame building. That's just me personally on this.
So can I clarify one thing with Bill first? Sure. Make sure the next step, if you say we want to move forward with this, would be for Bill to put together the architectural designs to which we would present to you for your discussion before it's finalized.
And I would recommend in doing that you can frame this building in metal studs. Okay. You can use metal trusses and you can use metal siding and so forth, basically a metal building. Our recent experience is that that's more expensive. I am currently also working in Kinston with the Lenoir County SPCA. They wanted to do a much larger shelter, but we had to reduce the size of that. And they're doing it with a contractor there in Kinston as a design build approach.
That's exactly right.
And they're finding that the wood frame is the only way they can do it.
But my point being from this is that when he brings the architectural designs back and we say, yes, this is what we want to build, then we put it out for bid. That's when we start trying to get the best price for that. Because right now he's estimating a price based on what he's got, what he knows.
Yeah, I think we're clear, David. You know, I like the plan. I think it's a very good plan, especially on the smaller one. I think the larger one is It's a little more than we can afford at this time. But on the smaller one, I think that this is a very good plan in terms of the layout of the building. There are some issues about, I'm not real, it wouldn't be satisfied with the wood construction. Again, that's just kind of a waste for us. But I think the plan that Bill has drawn is a very good plan. But I think we need to definitely look at the possibility.
One thing Bill said that makes sense is design build. Yep. Okay. And there's several companies that are local in the area that do design build and that can look at this. And Bill, let me ask you a question though. Design build, in the terminology that I've used down in Florida, they basically draw this building themselves. They have somebody that works with them, engineers that do this. And what is the definition of design build up here, Bill?
Bill, hold up 1 second, please. Commissioner Trent, when we first did this, we looked into design build and found out that the process that would involve is more detailed and not very many. It requires not only that we have a construction manager in or someone who in the county who can do the construction management piece, but manage the whole process from beginning to end. There are some requirements that we don't meet. And with the design build, so we couldn't do it. That's why I took that.
Well, he's the one that said it. That's the reason I brought it up.
And let's back
Bill
off.
Bill said design build. He goes, you look at design build.
I said,
I'm trying to get his definition of that.
And I'm working on that. In this particular case, the design build is through the USDA because they're funding the project. Oh. And so this is going to be enlightening, I think. The contractor is Group 3 Management, and they asked me to work with them as the designer of record. I had done an original design for the project that we bid, which was the USDA's primary approach. That came in at $3.5 million, and it was 11,000 square feet, and that was several years ago. They balked at that because they didn't want to spend that much, and they waited. They came back and asked me what could we do, and I said, well, at this point, you have to reduce the size of your building and the number of animal spaces and so forth. And they said, okay, let's do that. So we're now down to about 8,000 square feet, and it costs $3.5 million. This is my experience. So
he's basically the designer, and then you have a builder.
You have a builder. A
contractor, and that's where he's coming up with his terminology, design build.
And I'm working, you know, I'm putting together the drawings that the USDA requires as well. And so, of course, does the building official. We also have to meet the energy code in North Carolina.
That's right.
Yeah, all that has to be done. So whoever designs it has to do all of that. And the difference is with the design builder is more or less in charge of the project.
That's right.
And you know, is working directly for you. You're at arm's length with the designer. That person answers to the builder.
Appreciate the answer, Bill.
Yeah. And you're right, David, on a project like this. I mean, first of all, it's in the library project. We had an independent firm who actually did the management of the construction for us in addition to the architectural drawings and the actual contractor. This case, if design bill is what originally said, then there would be an additional cost to us.
That's correct.
In order to manage it if we could not.
That's correct.
Okay. So are we saying then if we go with Bill, these are his plans, but we would still need to incur that kind of cost? Who's going to cover that for us under this?
Are we saying?
If we went with Bill's drawing, as the architect, is he going to cover that part of it for us, the management of what the actual contractor that we choose does? That's in that plan.
A little confusion here. The contractor is absolutely responsible for managing his forces, for managing his subcontractors, for obtaining all the materials, for complying with all of the
code.
The code, well, with you know, based on the drawings. He's responsible to actually manage the construction. Our role in that is to oversee what they're doing, make sure that they are in compliance with the contract documents and the codes, et cetera. And we, you know, we attend monthly meetings with them and review what they're doing. So do our engineers come at specific times when it's critical to look, say, at, you know, mechanical rough end and that sort of thing, and create punch lists for them to make changes if necessary to what they've done, if it's not in conformance. We review all of their pay applications, do all the paperwork, do punch lists and substantial completion and all of that, which is the traditional role of design firms in design, bid, build, which is essentially the way we're doing Duplin, the way we did Caldwell. We also recently completed renovations and additions to Pitt County. You might want to go down and take a look at that if you have a chance, to get an idea of what we're looking at in terms of what the building will be.
Thanks, Bill. I mean, that's exactly the way the library worked for us too. And on the teacher housing, it's the same thing. It was an additional $15,000 in addition to the architectural drawings and the whole plans in order to, quote, manage the payout and, you know, that the work was done according to the plans, right? The contract has responsibility, meeting all the codes, all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's, I think that's where we are. So the question again is to the board is, you know, do we want to move forward in order to take these plans? I think we're kind of...
Bill, how far out are you as far as getting working architecturals?
Well, I've got to get the engineers involved as well, because even with a small building, we're going to have to design the systems and so forth. So it's several months out.
Okay. Several months being probably...
Say 6 months.
6 months out. So we're basically talking somewhere around August.
Yeah, August, September, I think would be realistic.
Here's a thing. I think we've beat this around horn. We know where we are. I'm going to make a motion, if you will, and we can
one
vote
more
our
question,
pleasure.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
The architecturals themselves, how much are the architecturals to be drawn? Have you got that broke out?
How much in terms of money?
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Well, yeah, the contract, what is there, $60,000 left, but that includes all the mechanical and structural as well.
All right, so $60,000?
Roughly.
Okay.
And the total cost...
But wait, let's back up. To get to August, it's less than that because, as I said, about 20% of the overall architectural fee beyond the first part we've done now is spent during construction. So you won't be spending that money, all of it, until you actually construct a building. And then that's a monthly.
But that money is already encumbered, so we have
that's
to.
Right. Yes. So that's the issue. We've already spent a sizable piece of money with the work the bill has already done. He estimated that the rest of it is somewhere in the neighborhood of about $40,000, right?
I'll make the motion that we move forward with the architectural drawings with the firm that we're speaking with here. I'll refer to Bill.
I'll second that motion. All those in favor, you've heard the motion? And
question.
Yes.
Question, almost chair. I'm in favor, but at the same time, I like to see Bill, you know, when we let project out for bigs, try to make sure that the county get the lowest per square foot that the Elm shelter can be built.
Well, that is definitely the intent here.
Yeah. And, you know, and we'll see where those bids come in with the contract.
Right. That's right.
So we've heard the motion and the second. Any additional questions, concerns? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. And that's moving forward with the architectural.
Moving forward with Bill with his plans to complete the design work that he has already started.
And that is with the 15.
That is with the smaller building, Bill, the 15, 18.
Okay. So let me just give you one other, and there's no additional cost, but here's another thing we did at Duplin. They knew they couldn't build all that they really needed. And so what we did was we did what I'm going to call a core shelter, which will be the small one in this case. And then we include drawings for the addition of those parts of the building that we didn't include. And if we get a better square footage price, you may be in a position to accept those alternates. Is that, and I'm, that's all in what we're doing.
Yeah. All right.
I would say, yeah, let's go ahead and go for that.
That gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yes,
it does.
All right, so we've heard it. We've made the vote. And?
Hey, Bill, thank you. I'll try and get with you tomorrow afternoon and talk more about this, and we'll go for the next steps. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Bill. We appreciate your work, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Great. Okay. Right. The next thing on our agenda is the presentation of our audit fiscal year 21-22 by Thompson Price Scott Adams and Company, PA. County Manager, are we ready for that presentation? Great, thank you.
How's everybody doing? My name's Austin Eubanks. I'm the audit manager at Thompson Price Scott Adams, our Wilmington office. We did have the pleasure of auditing Bertie County for the fiscal year end, June 30, 2022. I'll go through some of our required communications. Our responsibilities fall under the generally accepted auditing standards, government auditing standards, OMB uniform guidance, and the State Single Audit Implementation Act. We were able to design the audit to provide reasonable assurance that the financial statements are free of material error and in compliance with government regulations. We were able to perform and plan all our procedures and have full access to management. And I will get to the significant deficiencies in internal control at the end. Adoption of the accounting policies was just for this fiscal year was GASB 87, the leases. Leases are now shown on the face of the financial statements, and they're no longer operating leases if they're longer than 1 year. So what happened with this for the town, for the county, as far as the lease liabilities, you now have $428,000 worth of lease liabilities. Lease receivables is around $700,000. Significant audit adjustments or unrecorded differences, there was none.
Right.
Disagreements with management, there was none. Consultation with other accountants, none. And no prior retention issues.
Great.
Significant difficulties, we did not encounter any. Irregularities or legal acts, also none.
Right.
So getting into the actual numbers.
What page are you on? Can you announce the pages you go to?
You just finished number 69.
I'm sorry, 69.
69?
Yeah, I'm sitting there now.
So we had no deficiencies found in the first pieces that you just...
Well, there was and internal controls.
Right. There you go. We'll get to that.
So looking at the general fund itself, total revenues and other financing sources, $28,107,000. The total expenditures and other financing uses, $27,710,000, giving you a net change of $396,527. The minimum undesignated fund balance, this is a parameter that LGC likes to see. And for a county of your size, you should have 20% of unassigned fund balance. And that would put you at $5,542,164. However, your unassigned fund balance is $1.7 million, putting you at 7.12%. So significantly below the LGC's threshold. The tax collection rate is 97.82% overall. So getting into some bar graphs, so the past 4 years, obviously this year you did collect a lot more, but also there's a lot more expenditures. A lot of that had to do with some grants. So you broke almost even, again, $396,000. Going into your top four revenues for the general fund alone, your ad valorem taxes, $12,362,000. That came in at 45% of the total revenues. Unrestricted intergovernmental, a lot of this is your sales and use tax. That was $3.5 million, that's 13%. Restricted intergovernmental, majority of this is grants, $4.6 million, 17%. Sales and services, $4.2 million, 15%. All of the revenues combined, $2.7 million, and that was 10%. So going over to your general fund operating expenditures, public safety came in at 35%, being the majority of your expenditures at $9.5 million. General government, $3.9 million at 14%. Educational expenditures, $3.8 million at 14%. Social services, 4.6%. Debt service, this is your principal and your interest combined for the year. For the general fund, $2.8 million at 10%. and all other expenditures combined, $2.6 million at 10%. So looking at your analysis fund balance, this has been an issue in the past, and it still kind of is, with this, you only having 7%. So total fund balance, it did go up due to the $396,000 of operating income this year. It went up to $5,792,000. However, your unrestricted or available to spend at your discretion is $1.7 million. And what's committed, restricted, and assigned is $4,061,000. Majority of this is your state stabilization, and that's basically your receivables. And receivables make up the sales and use tax, 2 months or 3 months worth of that, and also your ambulance receivables.
Okay, so even though that is still below the requirement of the state, we made progress from that, right? The available from the prior year 21 up
$294,000.
We went up $1.2 million. So I'll get this about to show in another slide. This slide here shows the progress.
Yep.
So from 2019 to 2022, obviously in 2019, you were at 7.44%. 2020, you had a really bad year as far as I think there was some really large restricted fund balances, and that brought you all the way down to 1%. And then last year, 6.3%, and this year, 7.1%. It is progress, yes, but still you're well below the 20% threshold from the LGC. Until you meet that, you will be probably stay on the unit assistant list.
We are very aware of that. Working our way out of that hole.
Okay. So going on to your other major funds, SLFRF, ARPA project, total revenues and other financing sources right at $1.2 million. Total expenditures. With projects like this, your expenditures will match your revenues, so you should have no fund balance in these. So net change is zero. All your non-major grants, non-major governmental funds combined, total revenues and other financing sources, $1,003,000, total expenditures, $393,849, giving you a net change of a positive $609,000, bringing your net position from $284,000 all the way up to $894,000 for your non-major funds. Moving on to your enterprise funds, the regional water district, total revenues and non-operating revenues, $3,118,000, total expenditures, was $2.8 million, giving you net income before your capital contributions, which is some grants, of $311,865, capital contributions of $79,000, total net change of $391,000, bringing your net position up to $16,963,000. Internal Service Fund, total revenue $65,000, expenditures of $54,000, net change of $11,363. Net position at the end of the year was $68,606. So looking at your cash on hand, Internal Service Fund had $12,784 all unrestricted. The Water District, $325,000 was restricted. $1.6 million was unrestricted. Non-major funds, $207,000 restricted. $591,000 all unrestricted. ARPA Fund, $136,000 left. All of that is restricted. General Fund, $249,000 is restricted and $2.9 million unrestricted.
There's $2.9 million in there?
Yeah, your general fund right now. So just to point out a little bit about your analysis fund balance, some of the ways you can improve this is by reducing your expenditures, because it's based on expenditures 20%. So if there's, and what's really hurting you right now is you have $19 million of in your total outstanding debt, and $2.9 million of that's being spent every single year right now. That's what I think is one of the biggest factors for you.
Well, you know, one of the things that and this was planned into the structure is when, you know, because we paid off a lot of the prior debt looking at
the hospital
and also DSS. But with the way we structured the new high school debt is that it automatically replaces when we decrease that debt, that amount is carried over into the new principal so that we pay that off faster.
Okay.
That's where it had to be structured in order for us to be able to afford it, quite frankly.
Right.
How much
so
did
you're
you
not
say,
gonna see a lot of reduction there.
How much did you save us being paid per year on that?
It's right at $2.9 million.
$2.9 million
in debt. Debt service, $2.8 million. Yep. And that's your principal and interest combined.
Right.
I think that also is included the new leases as well.
I'm sorry?
The leases.
Leases?
Yes.
Okay.
So leases now is not considered an operating expenditure. Now it's moved over to long-term liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
You don't recall just from off the top of your head what the general interest rate we were paying on that outstanding debt overall. You guys, you remember?
I don't know. I'm sure it's variable rates.
Right.
If you want me to look it up right quick.
Well, the question I was asking is one time before in several years we were able to refinance the debt and lower that rate fairly significantly. I know right now with interest rates kind of on the rise, that may be difficult to do, but I wonder what current rate compared to what we originally structured this, if that gives us any advantage.
We need to get our financial advisors in here.
Oh, yeah. They can answer that, but I just wonder if they knew what
that was. Yeah, one of them's 2.75%. Yeah, another's 2.75%. Another one's 0%.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're pretty. Most of them are pretty low right now.
Okay.
Right. The thing about it is, way back when we had about 9 capital projects that went on at one time, or 7, I think is what
right.
it was.
Yeah.
And you got $2.9 million, $2.8 million a year going out to make these payments.
We know what. Yeah, we know where we got there. It's all we're going to do is to, you know, either grow revenue or cut our expenses someplace on that line. So okay, great, thank you.
Going into those internal control findings, was from the Medicaid findings. We have these every year. For every single one of our counties that we do audit Medicaid, we always find eligibility issues. So out of the 279,000 cases that you did have, we did examine 91, and there was 33 errors discovered. I do want to say these errors did not affect the eligibility of the individuals, but however, there are still errors within the calculations. So break these down. The errors were as follows. 4 cases did not have accurate resource calculations. 8 cases did not have accurate budget calculations. 16 cases had a failure to complete at least one compliance component. And 4 cases contain an inaccurate need unit calculation. So again, there was 33 errors. However, they did not affect the eligibility of none of the individuals.
And do you know what segment of DSS that these fell into, that were the child protective services, senior services, et cetera?
Not 100% sure on that right offhand. No, but I can definitely get back with you on that.
If you could, I would imagine that a lot of these might have fallen within child protective services, and we have the state in working with us right now to correct that. They've been here for a while, so I think we may see different progress. So, but it's not surprising that you're finding these. And
well, we find these for every single county. With just what happens with the DSS, there's a lot of turnover in those roles. There's a lot of lack of training available. And with a lot of the less training and a lot of new people coming in and out, just they're thrown to the wolves, basically, is what I feel like.
And the good thing, though, what you found is that there were not any awards that were not warranted or not justified.
Correct.
And the state found the very same thing when they examined. So that's. Yeah, okay. Better right
here. And that was the only internal control issue we did have. However, the LGC, they do have these unit assistant lists. So from the day you have 60 days to write up a letter regarding these issues. Again, the being below the 20%. So you've been at 7.12%. The audit was late again this year. And that's the only two issues that needs to be written up about, just saying that you do agree with these and what you plan to do to mitigate these going forward.
Right. And we have to do that anyway as part of the.
Yes,
the
unit assistant list. Yeah.
There you go.
And that's the end of my presentation. Any questions?
Well, that was kind of painless. we knew pretty much where we stood.
Correct.
The fact that we are making slow progress. But again, we thank you for the job that you guys have done. We know that there were some issues with us in the past in terms of our working relationship. You guys taking that over a new force, right?
Yes.
It looks like we've kind of got beyond that, right?
Yes, sir.
Which is good. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you. thanks for coming in person.
Yeah, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, really appreciate that. Yeah.
Appreciate
yeah.
that.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. So take care.
Already. Good. Making progress. Great. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the appointment section. We have a Director William Robinson concerning the financial summary. William, before you start, I want to say a lot of the credit for the progress that we have made via that audit, you have been a big part of that for us. And so we really appreciate your due diligence. We know it hasn't been easy. We knew we're in a big hole. And you helped us, first of all, understand that hole and then work our way out. So, and you've been very close on T and what you projected for us going forward. So we're really hoping that the end of this year will put us back in significant better standing than we are, right?
Oh, I appreciate that. In fact, I wanted to follow up with my opening statement was reference back to page 71 in his presentation. One of the key elements he said was to hold down your expenses. Well, I kind of was going through the year thinking we were going to hold our expenses down. And near the end of the year, we started getting a lot of money sent to us through DSS for low income wealth and all this kind of stuff. Not to say we didn't want it because it helps the citizens, but you can see how it kind of jacked our expenses up quite a bit over where I thought we were going to be. Now,
we thought we were going to be around 25 right. million.
And you really don't know what that does until you realize that this number is the divisor that they divide the fund balance by to get your percentage, which I thought it was kind of interesting when he said, try to drive your expenses down. He's right. If we hold our expenses That's down, right. our percentage will go up.
You know, you and I talked about this, and we were figuring $25 million is what we were figuring.
Somewhere yeah, I mean, I was expecting to be somewhere close to no higher than what we had the previous year.
This is $2.2 million more
yeah.
than what was anticipated.
Significant amount.
But yeah. Well, what can we really do about that, understanding that these are things that came in for us automatic,
right.
and we had no choice?
We really had no choice. I'm just saying it basically kind of muddies the water a little bit when you're anticipating something. Right. And then you get hit with something like this.
And you said it was DSS, correct?
A large part of it did.
But conversation that we had, Lonnie and I, about this is that as we look back over multiple years, this is not the only time that this kind of thing has hit us. So is there any way for us to look at prior performance and build that equation into what our expectation is around budget? So we don't, in fact, deal with this every year, knowing that it's going to be there to some degree. Is there any way for us to look at that to know what is expected during these last months, quarter in particular?
I would say in an event like this, probably not, because I think this kind of came from the leftover amounts of ARPA money and all they had where they redistributed and found other use for it. So once all that money is kind of gone, you probably won't see something like that happen again.
I agree with that.
But this is larger than the prior debt.
Right, because that was a large amount. However, I think it will help us if we're mindful of our spendings, because anything that we can cut back on in order to, you know, balance that out will be very helpful.
So that's $2,159,000. Okay, 663. And we didn't have that.
That's a calculation I'm not ready to present right now.
What would be the percentage of?
If we took the expenses down
by $2.1 million. Might as well, it was almost $2.2 million.
To drop it back down to the 26 million range.
Drops it down to 25
million.
25,571.
You went down to 25, didn't you? What kind of percentage did you come up with if you took his fund balance there?
Your fund balance was 28,107, right?
Oh, that was the revenue and other financial sources.
Okay.
That's a 20. That wasn't fund balance.
Bye-bye.
You think if we added that amount directly to fund balance? That's your question. Mm-hmm. Fund balance was 1.7,
173, right?
Uh-huh.
Man.
Yep.
Plus 2.155. They give us about 3,885,000 if you add the two together. What are you coming with, Kenny Manor?
Yeah, I'm still getting, as far as the percentage, you still actually.
Well, I can do that real quick, too.
It's nine.
Well, you can't really do it straight off because that's not the number they're going to divide it by, but they make an adjustment in there.
That is correct. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, estimating as you get down to the end, that's right. The problem.
I'm going to say it's hard to look at that without looking at the sheet where they actually calculated it on.
Yeah, but that's the figure that we want to be able to track as we go forward, right?
Yeah.
All right. Let us know that's important.
All right. And to move on to what I'm here for.
Yeah, there you go.
Hopefully in your packet was a financial summary. In here, I added a little category at the top. It's in a little block. It says the goal is 58.3%. That's because 7 months, January, 7 out of 12 give you 58.3. That way you can kind of look down and see if there's any areas of concern. A couple of areas I wanted to point out to is council of aging. That looks like it's getting a little high, but you actually have some budget amendments coming up that will kind of address some of these issues where they're trying to add some more additional funds in there for the Mideast Commission has found some additional money to add there. So that's going to help level that out a little bit.
Is that the carryover money we requested up better than our share? Is that what that is?
This was some, I think she said, ARPA money that could be allocated to the county. And you got some paperwork in here that needs to be approved
that's
and signed.
Tonight. That's okay.
Soil conservation looks high, but again, that was the big money spent for the clearing and snagging, and it just gradually come down. Emergency services are a tad bit high. That's largely due to going through your holiday season and all. You have all that holiday pay and all that kind of jacks up his expenses. That should keep coming down a little bit as we go through the months. I really don't see anything else that really alarms me. You'll see cash that I have in the bank is $11,683,000 compared to $8.9 a year ago. You flip over to the back, the water looks good. I do want to point out that I do have a reimbursable project. It's the Woodville-Lewiston replacement system. We have submitted $128,250 to people for reimbursement. We actually have some paperwork, I think, in here tonight that's going to be talked about, too. Is it going to be talked about? No, that was just something you had to fill out, wasn't it? Okay. We got some paperwork that's been requested that we got to send in order to get this money back.
Okay.
When's that going to be done?
Soon, this week.
Okay, you have it done this week?
Yeah.
But we know the issue that we had with reimbursements, right, in the prior year. So we're going to. Well,
that's part of the reason I have this on here, so I can keep an eye of how much I have outstanding and see what we can do to try to get it in before we hit June 30th.
Okay. So can we make sure that we're monitoring that on a monthly basis when we report? Because, you know, that has hurt us before.
Yes, it has.
So that killed us on the library.
Right. And we learned some things, right, about that. So let's make sure that we monitor that. Now, the other question I have is around EMS. And I know we haven't had what's the last time we had a major update from EMS on where they're likely to finish the year and what the cost
is. It's probably been 6 months.
Right.
Or longer. Because I think they have one.
It looks like we're okay, but I want to make sure that they're not going to be what the projections are from Mitch. Are there any, you know,
we can try to schedule to come in on the next meeting.
Looking at the total cost.
We can try to get them scheduled in for a presentation on the next meeting.
Yeah, for the
billing guy here.
Well, we can ask if the billings are in line with what they normally are, around that 72%.
I think we should.
If we don't even get him, he's a good guy.
I think we should have it.
We actually, about, I think, 2 weeks ago, had a meeting with them upstairs to discuss some other things.
All right.
Everything seemed to be in order, but I would like for them to tell y'all that. And
He's also good at giving us further suggestions about what we can expect, too. So let's see if we can have it. And that's for the work session.
And also the uncollectibles, of course, but they're not being able to collect.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I really have nothing else to really point out on this unless y'all see something you want to talk about.
No. Other than 22, January 31st of 22, we were $8,962,000. Now, January 31st of 2023, we're $11,683,000. It is climbing.
We are. We're making progress. There's no doubt about it. Okay. Anything else, Wayne?
Not at this moment. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. That concludes the appointment section of the agenda. See, we have no board appointments tonight. I want to look at the consent agenda, and I'd like to direct your attention to the first four items on the agenda: approval of register of deeds report, to have that before you, and the minutes of 12:05, the minutes of open and closed session 119, and the minutes of open and closed section 2-6 of 23. First, I want to ask Jonathan, have any of the correct changes that the legal team has had a chance to review this, and have all those been included?
Let's see now. Lloyd was able to get to what was in court and was able to make his changes this afternoon when he got back from court. So all of our attorney changes have been made. I just don't know if they're in the hard copy that you're looking at. Okay, separately on your desk then.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So those have been made by you in here. Is that
the
correct?
Red line that came from attorney.
Lloyd.
So they have, okay. Right. So of course they have not been made within these two documents, right?
They have not printed out for you. They have been.
I've been corrected.
Yes.
Okay. Any significant issues?
No, it's mostly grammatical.
Okay. Well, if it's the pleasure of the board, I'd like you to be able to address items 1 through 4. What is your pleasure?
I'll make a motion. We approve 1 through 4.
Okay. Do I hear second?
Second.
Commissioner Trent. Second by Commissioner Robinson. All those in favor of approving items 1 through 4 of the consent agenda, which is register of deeds report, February 23, approved minutes of 12:05. Minutes close and open and close session of 119 and open and close minutes of 2-6. All those in favor, please say aye. All opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you, LaShonda. That work. Next is the resolution requesting revision of the expansion of the Good Shepherd Law. Good Samaritan law.
I hadn't heard of that one.
Yeah, I included this in the agenda because this is getting widespread acceptance, you know, in other counties in the state, and it covers a protection that many counties and I would personally say that we need to consider. So if you've had a chance to read this, what is your pleasure on this matter? Well,
I'll make a motion we move forward.
So we approve it?
Yes.
Great. No, I have a second?
Second
by Commissioner Ballance. All those in favor of approving the resolution requesting the revisions an expansion of the Good Samaritan Law, please say aye. All those nay? Opposed? None? That's approved. Great. The last one is the resolution authorizing the execution of the opioid settlement and approving that supplemental agreement. Jonathan, you want to give us your take on that?
Yes, sir. Sure, I can. There was a first round of settlements that involves some of the what they call the big three distributors. When that was done, the state prepared a memorandum of understanding on the distribution of the proceeds between the different levels of government. Now there's another set of settlements, so it's round two. And with this supplemental agreement for additional funds, the resolution is this board adopting what's called the SAAF, which is the Supplemental Agreement for Additional Funds, which revises the memorandum of understanding to just basically say the second round of funds, opioid settlement funds, will be distributed the same way as the first round.
That is correct.
So that's what you would be approving.
Great. And the recommendation from the County Commissioners Association is that we approve this and we move aggressively to sign this, because it takes a certain percentage of all counties in order to move this forward. I think the county, the commission is recommending that we approve this. Now, this is the second round, and there are likely to be at least a couple of additional rounds. The money is really starting to add up for us. So at some point, we're going to make sure that we need plans in order how we're going to execute around spend of those funds. And we have some availability of resources from the Association of the Sites, best demonstrate practice, that kind of thing that we can look to. All right. So what is your pleasure?
I made the motion. We accept.
All right. Do I have a second on that motion?
Second.
It's moved to probably second that we approve the resolution authorizing the execution of the opioid settlement and approving the supplemental agreements for additional funds. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you very much. Number seven, the approval of the MIDI's ARPA funding. William has just indicated that that's additional funds that will come back to us that will improve our spend ratio on that for this year. So I would, as chairman, I would certainly recommend, and as the representative on the MIDI's commission, that we move forward to approve and accept that funding.
I'll make a motion. We approve
MIDI's ARPA. Moved and second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you. William, you're back again with budget amendments.
Yeah, it actually coincides with what you just approved.
Mm-hmm.
The budget amendment that I have is actually the first round was for the additional funds for Council of Aging. And then this paperwork you have in here was the additional funds for DSS.
Right.
So I'm asking for approval of the budget amendment to put it in both pots of money into both accounts.
Great. You've heard the question. What is your pleasure?
I'll make the motion. We approve the budget amendment.
Will I have a second?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Trent, second by Commissioner Robinson, that we approve the amendments to budget. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you, William.
Okay. The next one is a project amendment. And the reason I was called a project amendment is because we set up a project ordinance with this opioid money.
Right.
And I've got this notice that NOAT2 notice of abatement distribution from North Carolina, where Bertie received another $5,895.27. So this project amendment is so I can get that put into the account.
Okay. And one just a little side note, I'll say to this, we were at a ribbon cutting for the mental health mobile unit that covers our county and three other counties. Juan and I attended that. It's a beautiful unit, funded by Monarch and Trillium together. And so it's going to serve our citizens in a significant way. We know we're 740 square miles, and this will actually be able to, make it easier for our citizens to access these services. Okay.
Can I get approval?
Need approval on that project amendment concerning those dollars.
So moved that we accept the project amendment.
I'll second it.
Moved and properly second. Are those in any other questions, Bert? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the project amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, William. All right. Now, getting to now the section D of the discussing agenda. And this is probably the most important piece that we had, or one of the most important pieces that we had on our agenda tonight's identification of top priorities for congressional directed spending. Robin, would you mind coming up?
Oh, your turn.
Because I think we can make this pretty simple.
Okay.
We kind of want to get the thinking of the board in general, but also your commitment around making sure that we have a deadline of the 24th of this month to get our top priorities that are federal submitted. Is that correct?
Correct.
24th.
State.
Is it the state of state?
State.
State. State piece. Oh, even better. That the 24th. And so it requires that we wanted to identify specifically the top priorities that we had. We're looking to do a specific write-up on each of those so that we can present the other structure, the same structure that you and I use at the end of last year
right.
on the, you know, the earmark dollars, right? So a lot of you have already seen that, right? And here's just a quick recap, and you guys just throw me out there is that what I think came out of the discussion that we had over 2 days in terms of our planning, right? So obviously one of the top priorities was housing, right? And we wanted to look at two possibilities for housing, Robin, and that was the housing. We can give you the specifics about housing within 2.5 miles of the grocery store facility. We have that general statute, and we'd like to get some support for that. The other is looking for, and this is all workforce housing that has to do with on the western part of the county, right? That we need housing in that section. And the key piece of property that we have there is with Orlando and the being in the qualified census tract, right? That is larger than just Orlando. So it extends very much closer to Lewiston. We're looking at Purdue and some of that housing. Okay. We could look at the western portion, John, of that property, if nothing else, would be a key piece for us on housing. So those two key pieces that we need support around in terms of housing, I think. I'm just putting these out there, guys. The other one, Robin, is that you are very familiar with is Tall Glass of Water. And we were looking now for the larger piece of the next phase for Tall Glass of Water, right?
Correct.
So that's obvious, a big one for us. Probably, and I think this is the order that we can gain consensus around, is recreation. It's a feeling that we really need to move on recreation in terms of what's available there for us, grant funding, whether that's including moving of the department over to the facility where they would like to go. You know, we want to need work on the floor, work on the roofs. Donna can give us that.
Roofs, plumbing.
Roof, the shower facilities in the back, mold mediation.
So you're putting Tall Glass of Water in and that's the separate. Recreation move. This is separate.
That's a separate piece, okay. But that's specifically funded around their move and occupancy of that new site and what it's going to take to move that forward, right? The next, if you will, again, and that includes the roof, like John said, the shower facility, mold mitigation in the little theater. But Donna has all that information. She's already scoped that out a little bit.
Okay.
Next is we want to see if we can do anything around the western part of the county in terms of a grocery store. It's been a long need and high priority of our citizens out there. See if we can do something with that. And number five, the other one that we had here is the possibility of animal shelter. Dave, is there anything we can do? Additional funding opportunities around animal shelter. Because even if we go with a smaller piece and if it's scalable for us and we can get funding to help us with that or even extend that to the next phase, it would be a big deal for us.
Okay.
So those are the five that we just kind of, my recollection from what we kind of covered and in general discussion among the board kind of one-on-one.
Okay.
Does anyone have anything they want to add to that or is that where you think we are? Is there anything else you think should be on here?
And those are pretty much the same things we gave to our lobbyists too.
Right. Yes.
So for details, when we do the write-up, who would I go to? Does Mr. Vaughn have the details?
Well, that's a good point. First of all, I would, you know, I've done a lot of work on the housing between John and I. We can kind of give you the feel for these two parameters. So I wanted to say the two parameters and is the 2.5 distance so we can get that state support for housing, right? Because we have a contractor that's willing to put up the $10,000 for the application. The other piece is in talking with the HUD people at the legislative session, they tell us that the only real place, if we're going to look for federal housing, is around that qualified census tract. Because we can, because it is a qualified, that's one of the elements that we can likely get more funding for. This is a much higher score than if we just had to go with, you know.
On was our, that workforce or was that?
What they're calling market. Yeah, that's market rate slash workforce.
Okay.
We're not, you know. On the Windsor place or the Burt or the 2.5 miles, that's workforce market rate.
Okay.
But on the other piece on Orlando, that could be middle income housing, not low income housing. But middle income, that includes workforces, a large percentage of our citizens would qualify under meeting that standard of median income.
Right? And Lewiston's where all the employment's at.
That's okay? Right.
So and you the got Purdue Lewiston,
wage, John, would still fit.
You got 2,700 people there. You got over 3,000 people within 2 miles of Lewiston. So,
and if you look at the range of salary range for those people who work there, they would fall in that median income.
That's right.
Okay. So have you identified a dollar amount?
As far as the dollar amount
for the ask?
The house itself?
The housing themselves.
The how the what no, you're no, asking guess, for.
Okay, let me ask you a question. You're talking about dollar amount, you're talking about square foot price? Or what are you talking about?
Total cost of the bill price.
What are you requesting from?
Okay, say for example, on 12 acres, you're putting 80 units in. It's going to be close to $8 million.
Yeah, the one in Windsor, they're looking at 60 units. Okay.
Okay.
They build 60 units, and they're leaving 8 acres of land for the 60 units. That has no cost to, at this point for us, but we want to get support because there are only about 17 projects going to be funded. So we need the legislative support that we are in one of those. So we're not looking for necessarily money for that. I want to be clear, because that is not funded by us. That is funded by the builder. But there are only 17 projects that are going to be funded each year. We want to make sure that our need is known so that we can get that, right? The other is simply we need funding to build housing. So
okay.
We can get some specs.
So we can detail this.
We can get some specs on that
later.
Matter of fact, I've got a breakdown by square foot already.
And recreation with Donna, I say work with Donna. She's done some work with Anthony around what that would cost. We have the stuff to do mold mitigation ourselves, Wanda, we got from Carolina Rebuilders. And we can cut our cost. I'm not saying this is for us to look at funding, but Carolina Rebuilders could be willing to work with us with the labor in doing that, you know, to reduce our cost. But let's bid this as if we were doing it elsewhere in terms of funding. Okay. Grocery store in Lewiston, I don't have any idea what that would be or what funding could do for that. You have any idea, John? Or how
no, we I don't, but it could be something out there in reference to the commerce, something of that nature.
Yeah. Robin, if we could, here all we need to do is identify the need. Right. See what Steinberg and the other,
you have listed five priorities.
Yes, correct.
So we'll package it.
There you go. Right. You know, what we need for the animal shelter. I would plan around the larger unit. Right. And the anticipated cost of that.
Whatever that balance is you need.
1.1. I'd say just 1.1.
Even a larger number, dude.
200,000.
Robert.
1.1.
Now, the question is, you know, you're smiling. We need this by the 24th. We're not looking for a long, you know, extremely detailed.
It's a very short.
Yeah, it is.
Short questionnaire.
Fill in the blank.
And it's really not even ready yet.
I was asking about how long it's going
to
take.
You've already got the tall glass of water stuff. You know what that is. The other piece we can get to you very, very quickly. So can we, it's not due on the 24th, but our next meeting is, the work session is on the 21st.
So it's March 20th.
March 20th. Any idea that we can have that ready for review by the 20th? That gives us a little flexibility.
We'll work on it this week.
Okay.
But
whatever you have at that point, just share that.
Right. And I'm going to need some more help on the housing and the grocery store.
Right.
And we're still waiting on the finalized questions, the form.
That's correct.
Because this year they're breaking it down by what the category is. So natural resources may have one question and who it goes to, and infrastructure may have another list and who it goes to. So we're still waiting on that QR code, but Senator Steinberg will give us that.
Okay. You know, last time when we did it for the earmarks, the advice that at least that I got from Butterfield staff was check everyone that you thought might apply, right? All the departments where funding was doable. Is that still the same strategy?
It's a different form.
But don't they still have to check where the funds should come? If it's agriculture, if it's
Because they're separating the question. The question is broken down into agriculture, natural resources.
Right.
So, there isn't a reason to check anything because
don't we have to decide then where that goes, or is that automatic?
We have to see the form.
Okay.
We'll
lean on your advice on that. But we think whatever you have to show for us on the 20th, if not sooner.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Way before then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Great.
That's good.
Thank you very much. Yep. Can I manage you?
Sounds good to me.
Okay with that? Great. Great. Okay. The next on the discussion agenda is the review list of surplus properties. Jody? And that's in our booklet on D, what, D?
It's a very last page, should be page
160.
Remember when we used to have the tabs on?
And you gave us another copy on the desk anyway, right? Okay, great. In fact, I got two copies. Anybody need one? I got two.
Yeah, give me one.
Yeah. Proceed, Jody, I'm sorry.
Okay. After our last meeting, you asked me to go back and redo this list. We've taken some out.
Right.
I've redone that. One of these up here, the old landfill, I talked with representatives from Diener. After speaking with them, I referred that matter to County Attorney Smith. He is reviewing the legalities on the of selling that type of property.
Okay. Right, I see it. And that's the one that's...
1028 Charles Taylor Road.
Yeah.
It should be that first one highlighted.
99.66 acres?
That's right.
Okay. So we're waiting for that analysis?
Right.
Okay. Let's start by this. Where are we around picking the firm that's going to do this for, and what kind of dating are we talking about getting this done?
One thing is we have to determine which properties we are selling.
Okay, got that.
All right.
We're going to determine that tonight.
All right. Looking at the old gym, the old DSS, all that, I mean, that's probably that's going to have to be split. So you're going to have to decide where that split's going to take place.
Okay.
All right. Once we get that information, I know exactly how many parcels. I've already got the personal property listed at the bottom of these sheets. Mm-hmm. Then I can contact the auction company and get that set up.
Is there any reason, Jody, if we answer those questions, mm-hmm. that we cannot get this done prior to the closeout of this fiscal year? Because the whole idea of this was to have that income in, you know, before the end of the fiscal year.
I asked the county attorney, when we do the surplus sales, there's not a 10-day upset bid.
Yes.
Who is it? Only surplus sale.
Well, okay. So yeah, we do tax foreclosures. It's 10-day upset. But the auction sales, like the ones we've done with Bill Forbes in the past,
yeah, that's a one.
Those sales
are final that day.
Okay.
That
day. Yeah. Okay. So once we talk with the auctioneer and get their time frame, look at marketing. If we can do, say, 30 days marketing.
Okay.
What
I think what the idea, Jody, we really want to do is to try to complete this before the fiscal year. Count that additional revenue in.
Right.
In terms of the year.
I don't see any reason why if we finalize this tonight, I contact them tomorrow, and we could probably have it in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it looks like to me you've only got three that are in question, right?
Right. Well, the old landfill, the lot beside the library, there was talk of the county possibly giving that to the town. Yeah, that's something between this board and that board is going to have to, I guess, get together with.
Right. And I think, John, you made the comment on that said we'd put it out there. If they would want it, they could bid it, right?
Right.
We can go that route.
We can go that route, but make them aware it's out
right
there. Okay.
Yeah, and I would be surprised if there's anybody else.
Exactly.
I don't think it's right for us to give it away.
Right.
If there is, you know, some other value out there.
Sure.
Where, you know, I'm hopeful that they can afford to take it from
us. And then the last one was a part of the flood buyout. That's just one piece sitting in the middle of other pieces that were buyouts that the town owns.
We don't want that. Will the town take it? Town wanted to give it to us.
The town wants to give us all of it.
I know.
Yeah. We don't want it.
So, exactly.
What do you recommend about that? I mean, do we just...
We
don't want expensive... Well, they're going to still... That's still included under the teardown
Right.
Stuff, right? So right. That's not likely that we have to do anything with that. Just sit right. on that.
They just had the deed recorded on that in January. So, and okay. they have not torn, the house is still there, but it's right. on the list to be torn down.
There's nothing we can do about it, guys.
Right,
because I mean, you can't so, build on it. So yeah, I don't.
No, let's X that. That's ours. We're stuck with it. They'll yeah. tear it down, and we'll do something. Put up a soccer field, do something.
So that leaves us two, and we know what we're doing with those. So all yep. we need to do is make a motion to get the other ones in the deal, right?
There you go. Yes. Or that's one other one.
Just wait on the landfill.
Yeah, the old DSS location.
Yeah,
Jody wanted to cut out the part that is Mitch's.
But are we going to have a survey on that? I mean, you're going to have a survey to do that.
Yeah.
Cut it
yeah.
out. You'll have to have a survey.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you really can't use mapping because it's not yeah. a certified survey. So you're going to have it if it sells. So
the only thing Mitch has stated is that he wants to be able to get a tractor trailer to come in.
Right.
To be able right. to make a circle to go through that.
Okay. But everything else we can go ahead and vote and approve on.
Except for the landfill. Survey. We're just waiting on Mr. Smith with the landfill.
What were you going to say, David?
I'm going to just interject that what Mitch wants with that piece of property, we need to look at carefully because he wants a big, if what he wants may cause some problems with actually selling the rest of it. One big piece. The way he wants the roundabout to get the truck in and out.
Yeah, but this is 6+ acres. He doesn't want 6 acres worth of roundabout. I mean, he wants the area right around that, right?
Okay.
Well, let me ask you a question, Jody. Can't you get with mapping and fill and get the, or you can even pull it up on your mm-hmm. computer, the actual mapping of it, have Mitch draw on there what he's talking about?
Oh, I know exactly where it is. That's, if I can figure out how to get this up here, I can show you. Who's William? Mm-hmm.
But is that going to give us what the amount of
I need to get this
footage he wants? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but he could just show us what it, we don't need to get. What,
I think being the good stewards with the town want 1,400 acres. I think we'll give it to him.
That's on. You mean on the Crossland Stokes? Is that the point? Which one is that?
No, that's by the library.
The library. Well, I mean,
you know, it joins their parking lot and. If a soldier,
Joe, can you hear me?
0.1400 acre ain't a lot. Can't nobody do that.
No, I think they're two different things. The old library, we are talking about.
Joe, I'm trying to get the tablet to show up on the TV.
That little piece of land.
Yeah, I'm talking right here.
But isn't that right behind the library?
The only question is, what if somebody else wants
the library and needs that for parking?
Yeah. I'm just saying. And I think they're going to take them.
Show you.
So I think they're going to make interest.
10 years off of that.
Damn sure. Right. Well, you know, I think they would probably want to vote.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
So you can pull it up. Mm-hmm. And the
yeah,
we already
yeah,
yeah,
know
yeah.
what that is.
That's got it, Joe.
Okay, perfect.
What is that?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. He was looking at, if you're familiar with it, there's a road that comes in right here behind the old health department and comes around to the back parking lot. And there's a road that comes out right here. He wanted to draw this line straight down to include that road. And then this line going straight across right behind the health department, no DSS.
You would exclude where the buildings are, the other two buildings.
Yeah, if you take right here and go straight back.
Right.
Right behind those buildings.
Okay.
And then he wants to cut back across there. So you just get that vacant right there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that. Yeah, because there's an existing road here. That way you can get a tractor trailer to come in.
No, that's too much property, Jeff. Look, we've seen that building. We know it's parked there. That, and I know it's probably very well. That's rarely ever used, that space. He needs some distance on the other side of that building to get in and out of there. But that that much property, no way. No way. Right. We need to cut that back.
I agree.
Something much smaller than that. Smaller than that.
Right.
Okay. This is not a storage dump place or something. This has significant value. The residents of this neighborhood have been on our hind parts forever about doing something with this property. It's been there for years. It's a blight. And we want to get and it's a high priced property. We want to be able to get more single family homes housing in there.
Right.
Bring residents into this county. So let's work out something. Estimation of some footage, you know.
How many acres is that right there, Jody?
4.73.
Give me the point of where what that is. Draw your. Can you put a mark on there or something?
That blue line right there.
That's the whole property.
Right.
Right.
Okay, the whole property, but I'm talking about the part that is cleared that doesn't have buildings on it.
From Mitch's place back.
Right, exactly. How many acres is that?
I can't get that from here.
You can't get that.
We'd have to go in there.
All right, well, let's just say it's probably about 2.5-3 acres, maybe.
3 acres, probably. And that's including the other two buildings, which we would want to be offering in the sale. So it's just Mitch's little piece, which is certainly no more than an acre. Not even an acre.
Right.
Not even an acre.
Yeah.
Right? So whatever he needs, probably something to tune of a half acre or so, something like that. Fine.
Yeah, but that's 22,000 square feet.
That's all we need. So, you know,
okay.
And we have the other space down on County Farm Road. If he wants to store stuff down there, we got plenty of space. But let's move on this property. All right. We think of session.
Huh?
We good?
Yeah.
Jody, there's one other issue. You are making a recommendation also that we include, I want to be very transparent, is the other property on County Farm Road. When you come down from 17, you pass what used to be the convention center on the right, which is now the whatever. Right past where you turn in going down to the country club, that property, the roadside property on County Farm Road to right, is about 1,000 acres. That is one of the better pieces of property that we have. Is that on here, Jody? What's the value of that?
Yeah, I've got this on the old one.
You gotta get that one.
It's not about the industrial park area.
The piece right across from the bus garage. And we have the other pieces we're not going to mess with.
That's the other piece for the hunting thing
back behind the jail. This piece, we want to move on this piece.
There's like 200 or something acres back there.
Yeah, this is a south piece, 1,000. It's 1,000 foot frontage and about,
200 foot deep, 1,000 feet across the front.
Yeah, 14 acres. And that's prime.
That's kind of... Yeah. So from that corner to here, approximately 1,000 acres. Yeah, I mean, excuse me, 1,000 feet of road frontage.
That's a good piece of property,
Nice piece of property. You don't have a value on that yet, do you?
No. See, that includes that entire tract that goes all the way back to the river.
Right.
Right.
That's divided in also.
And what is your recommendation that we look to sell?
I mean, David's telling me it's the county industrial site or industrial area. Well, I mean, what does the board want to?
We want to sell it.
Yeah.
I would almost think that we want to hold on to something like that just for the sheer fact of somebody comes in here.
Whole piece?
Yeah, I would think so, because 14 acres, when you're talking about somebody puts up, I don't know, 20,000 square feet or 15,000, they're going to need parking. I mean, it's going to be a whole different animal.
You know, we do have the other space further down the road that we have that we passed Mitch's space. And we still have the place for the animal shelter on the other side of the road. So, I mean, there is space further down that we still have available. I mean, it's place with the board. I mean, that's.
I just really think we'll hold on to that because it's right there on County Farm Road. I mean, it could be used for any type of corporation. I mean,
the only issue you'd have just right across the street where we were talking about building the dog pound, you do have that little ditch that runs right through it here.
Okay, but that can be altered also.
Right.
And they're going to be behind that on the back end.
Yeah,
that can be altered. I'd say let's hold on to that.
If you recall, there was somebody interested in that property.
Yes.
Still being considered.
Yes.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
Still being considered?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we need to check with that because the person who was considered is no longer with us, so we need to make sure that we know what's going on with that.
Point being that, you know, we don't want to be.
Okay. That's valid. All right. So the consensus is we want to pass on that?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Then we're there, Jody. Those are the other pieces that we got.
All right. I will get with Mitch.
Right.
I'll get with Phil and we'll have that map out. I'll get you.
Give us an update on the 20th for the work session if you could. Okay.
All right. I think I'm next again.
Yes, you are.
So,
convening for the Board of Equalization review.
All right, the Board of Equalization Review. The Board shall hold its first meeting not earlier than the first Monday in May, first Monday in April, and not later than the first Monday in May. It shall complete its duties on or before the third Monday following its first meeting.
And we got a meeting on April 3rd.
And we have one on the 17th as well.
Can we do it on April 3rd?
Yeah. And next is there is nothing in the statutes about the number of times you have to have it.
Right.
DOR recommends not doing it in just one meeting, but that's entirely up to the board.
All right, commissioners, that's going to be on April 3rd, correct?
Yeah, they recommend not doing it in one meeting.
They recommend not convening and adjourning at the same meeting. It can do it. They just don't recommend it.
Can't we convene it on the 3rd and go through the motions? And if we need to, we can then move to the 17th.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, let's go with that.
Okay.
So let's make sure we inform Michael, so who's out of these dates that we're looking at.
All right, it's 17th. That meeting going to be at 9 a.m. or we're going to do 6?
We have it at 10 right now. 10 to 1 is what we have originally scheduled.
And the meeting on the 3rd, that's 6 o'clock? That's
6 o'clock.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And I've got to advertise this. But before then, I should, you know, I can email you roughly, get an idea of what we have, if any.
That works.
So,
great. Thank you, Jody. Is that what
it works? 10 o'clock.
Yeah, about 10 o'clock. 10 to 1 is what we have.
17th, right. 10 to 1.
There's a date, the 17th. That's correct.
Okay. And the 3rd for the first
of April.
That's what I got.
All right. Okay. So, Commissioners, do we commissioners report first before we're going to close session? Commissioners report.
Well, the Falcons went down. But anyway, they're still our winners.
Yeah.
They're still our winners.
One step from state championship. Anyway.
That's right.
But they did it well.
And losing one starter. So anyway, and we wish Bazemore the best. But we should be able to replace him next year and not replace him, but get another player just as good as he was or has been. And maybe next year we'll be there.
All right. Great. Commissioner Trent?
I'm good.
Great. First of all, one of the big pieces, just a couple of things, that we did receive the $500,000 grant for Parks and Recreation. Right. That's a real big deal for us, right? And that our request was the number one rated request again this year when we went planned. So that tells us we're doing something very well. Also on the Medicaid expansion piece, and this is important, that the looks like the state is going to move forward on Medicaid expansion. It's passed, excuse me. Thank you, sir. Now when I pass these down, so everybody can see. I'm not asking for a vote on this now, but I do want us to consider this for the next work session. This is from Care for Carolina. It looks at every county in terms of what expansion of Medicaid would mean for that county. And here we have about 12.6% of our residents here who would benefit from that whole gap that's covered now that would be closed from Medicaid expansion. Estimated it would bring 29 new jobs, about $5.3 million in business resources to us, and almost $93,000 in revenue to the county. You look at the numbers of people who would be impacted by this and how they would be, the cost of this Medicaid expansion would be for them. The second page, you look at the agencies and civic leaders who have endorsed this, including our Commissioners Association, the Board of Health, all the Sheriff's Association, you know, just everybody else, the towns and counties. So I'd like your review of this and consider, you know, putting this in an amendment, so that resolution of support for this that I will be prepared to have before you at the next meeting. This is important. A lot of folks said that we didn't think that we could get Medicaid expansion in North Carolina. Looks like we're going to get it. And we want to make sure that our name is on here and that we're supporting it to give that extra push across the line so the legislature will move on it. Okay, so I'll have that for you for the next viewing. That's it for me. For county manager?
No reports tonight.
Okay. County attorney, anything from you?
No reports.
And then we're going to go into closed session. So I need a motion to go into closed session. And you see this is pursuant to North Carolina General Statute 143-318.11A, 3, 4, and 6. What is your pleasure?
I make a motion that we move to closed session.
All right. Moved. Is that second?
Second.
Moved and probably second. All those in favor of going into closed session, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay? Ayes have it. Thank you. Again, open session. One of the things that we have here that I want to share with the board, I just received from Jody Ray concerning the property that is the ODSS building. Went back to Mitch, and the only thing he's really looking for is about 1.27 acres. Let me let everybody, it's only one copy, so everybody takes a look at that and see if that's what we feel satisfied with, that he's cut kind of the ask down about half of what he initially asked for. So that gives him the little road in and gives him a little storage. You see these, John? Should it with Ron. He's asking about half of what he originally asked for.
He's asking for half of what he originally asked for.
Yeah, so that just 1.27 instead of almost 2 acres. So just the outline pieces, what he wants.
That works.
These are the rest of that.
He put this in residential. Is this zone or commercial?
I don't know. No, it's zone residential.
So now?
Yeah, they already did. That's why they changed it when the board didn't want us to build multi-family housing. They're single family now. Well, I would say unfortunately, but that's what it is. All right. So if this is what Jody shared with us. So just want to get consensus that this is what we'll do with this property. Okay. So that's 1.27 acres that we're going to carve out from that ODSS place that will not be included in the sale. The other will, he'll still probably have to give it survey, but that's what we got. All right. Pass that to Kenneth Manager. So you'll have that one. All right. I think that's it for what we have on our agenda for today. Do I have a motion to close the meeting? Motion, Commissioner Trent, and second by Commissioner Robinson. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you. Good night.
You know what they did, Ron?